Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Context of white supremacy. you offer your own views on how the system of white supremacy is put together, and you also offer suggestions on how non-white people can deal, counter racism, white supremacy on the job. You talk about how one of the main ways that non-white people help to maintain white supremacy is by staying in conflict with one another. And you're talking about a situation on the job of how you use counter racism to keep the focus on white people. I'm just going to read this really quick and hope that you respond. One day, our manager called me to the office and asked me what I thought about this as a non-white employee. Our manager, a white person, suspected racist. Our manager stated that she received, this is the non-white person, received many complaints. The manager received many complaints about the non-white female and wanted to know what my assessment was of her. I sat for about 10 seconds in an upright position, not slouching, looking her right in the eyes as she spoke to me, waiting for her to finish. Once she finished, I kept looking her in her eyes and asked her one question: what problem are we trying to solve? She looked at me for what seemed to be 2 or 3 minutes and began to ask me the status of a few projects I had at the time. I gave her the status and she thanked me and I left the office. That's how counter-racist code works. Can you talk about how counter-racism is supposed to keep non-white people from being in conflict with one another and to stay focused on white people?
Yep, that was one example. The question that I asked is what I termed for myself as seven to ground, seven word question that grounds the entire conversation in producing justice. What problem are we trying to solve? That's one of the ways that on the job. I mean, there are many ways in all different areas of people activity, not just labor, but all different areas of people activity, where the white people who practice racism, white supremacy, keep non-white people focused on each other. I mean, you'll probably notice if you're watching a television program and they'll have two non-white people, one white person that's the interviewer, two non-white people, and as you watch that interview, you'll see the white person saying less and less the more the non-white people are at each other's throats. I noticed this quite a bit in some of the early experiments as well. The idea is to not necessarily keep the focus on white people, but keep the focus on producing justice and make sure that white people are given the opportunity to make that happen. I mean, that should be the focus. And so with that in mind, my behavior became different. I mean, there was a time in my life in my early 20s where I would have just read the Lady to Riot Act about all the things a non-white female had done. I mean, her behavior on the job was completely unprofessional. But I wasn't going to tell her that, because that's the way they play non-white people against each other. I mean, we have a very uncodified term for it. We call it divide and conquer. But what that really means is to keep non-white people focused on and in conflict with each other. I mean, that term, divide and conquer, doesn't talk about how anything is done. It's just a cliche term. Non-white people love cliche terms. And so, with an understanding of that, I began to say things different and do things differently. And that's one example where, instead of me talking about the non-white female, then later on, the manager calling her in the office and saying, well, we received a lot of complaints from Mr. Williams and other people. See how that goes? Now you've got the non-white people focused on each other. So then she comes back to me and says something, and I say something, and then the white people who started the mess in the first place have to jump in and separate us.
And maybe you both get fired.
Exactly. Exactly. But hey, that's how we play it out on a daily basis. Not only on the job, in church or the temple or the synagogue, in the grocery store. I mean, you hear about things on a daily basis. But in my understanding of counter-racism, I wasn't angry at her for the way that she behaves. I mean, this lady actually swung at me one time. I was sitting in my office, you know. If I didn't have some pretty good bob and weave, man, I would have got clocked. So, wow. I mean, and I don't know what was making her so angry and frustrated. I didn't talk to her. I stayed away from her. And so understanding what I do about how the system works and how to take it apart, I understood that, you know, she's qualified to say those things and do those things because of the situation that she's in. You know, and if she ever needs help, I'm a helper. And if she ever needs help, I'm a helper. Because that's one of the things I'm supposed to be doing while I'm on this planet. But until then, I'm staying away from her. Because she got a bad right cross, so.
I think that's minimized. Conflict, minimize contact, minimize conflict. I think that's code.
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. And it works. Mm. Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Wow. Do you think your white supervisor would have requested your input if the employee in question had been a white person?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the employee had been a white person, I would have done the same thing. See, the goal objective is to put the focus on producing justice. You know, I'm not going to sit here and gossip with you about this person at all. I mean, what are you even asking me that question for? These are the things I'm thinking. You know what I mean? You don't need my help to fire her. You didn't need my help to hire her. You know, so why are you even asking me questions about somebody else's behavior? It doesn't make sense. Unless the objective is to cause conflict, then it makes super sense.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, November 3rd, 2016, so I have been told. This is our weekly forum on workplace racism. The number to dial is 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Again, workplace racism. This is not a broadcast where you can just, you know, prop your feet up and listen and be entertained, riveted for the next few hours with different discussions or questions. Observations about racism in the workplace. This is active participation, counter-racist exchange of views for non-white people, black people, to get their thoughts in about racism on the job, just things that have happened to you if you're having specific problems. Certainly, if you have figured out some codified techniques to help solve problems, to minimize conflict with other coworkers, white or non-white, to make sure that you stay out of trouble, don't get any write-ups, get all your raises, promotions on time, and just coast your way to retirement for however long you choose to remain employed. If you have figured out how to do that, great. If you're having obstacles, I'm sorry to hear that, though not surprised, and certainly dial in. It would be great. I always say I think it's very constructive just being able to hear the different types of experiences that people have on the job. Worldwide, certainly at least across the country and worldwide, because I think that gives such a better grasp of the layers of racism, white supremacy. You get to see trends in terms of how racists operate in the area of labor, typical things that they do to us on the job, and you can maybe even figure out some things to do to kind of neutralize that in advance or to at minimum be prepared when it looks like whites might be engaged in some of those behaviors on your job. But you just get to see the same types of strategies play out worldwide and similar things happening on the job. I think it really helps put us in a better position to defend ourselves on the job. That's my view. Certainly, if you do not agree, we can do other things with our time and energy. But at least that's my view. I hope it's constructive for people who participate. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. I'm reminded, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, I know she said consistently, there is no way, if there is such a thing as global white supremacy, there's no way that you can get, you know, five black people together and not have robust dialogue about workplace racism, if we're being truthful, because so many black people, that's our experience, 40 hours, 50 hours or more per week being on the job, mistreated, not compensated correctly, subjected to all forms of harassment, violation, verbal and otherwise, demotions, write-ups, just being harassed, daily, constantly. That is, you know, the lived existence for Black people worldwide and has been for some time. And I just think, you know, being honest about that, exchanging some views about that, I think that can help us work towards solving this problem and recognizing the astronomical burden that white supremacy racism is. We're not talking about a quote unquote microaggression at all. I will also remind folks, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com. If you are not able to talk live, you can send us an email and I will share your commentary on the air. The email untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can keep it anonymous. We can read it during the course of the broadcast. I have a few that people mailed in already. Before I get to that, just make sure I give my acknowledgement. You heard Mr. Edward Williams' audio segment at the beginning of the program. Edward Williams, he is the founder of the site counter-racism.com. counterracism.org or .com, either one will take you to the website. Counter Racism Radio. He has the work study page where they have notes about workplace racism. Mr. Williams, he authored the book How to Support and Defend the Constitution for Victims of Racism. That program that you heard at the beginning, that was way back 2011. Mr. Williams has been on the program repeatedly. He's called our workplace racism segment before. Always great to have him on the program. I thought that was a great exchange. We talked quite a bit about workplace racism back on that broadcast in 2011. And absolutely in the workplace. I thought that was so great when he said, when he was talking about that exchange, that he writes about that in the book where he was on the job and a Black coworker swung at him, didn't strike him, but actually swung at him violently. And he said that subsequently, his white manager called him into the office and asked him what was his opinion about this same Black female who had swung at him. And, you know, what were his thoughts about her? And he said that's when he just went and gave his question, what problem are we trying to solve? And that ended the meeting pretty abruptly. Things wrapped up and he went about his business. He didn't, you know, as he said, he didn't go into a long tirade about being assaulted by her. And, you know, she did this and she did that and have his list of grievances ready to broadcast. He didn't do that. I thought that was rather impressive. And I mean, that's, you know, being codified on the job, it's not a personal thing. Counter-racism, in my view, it shouldn't be a personal thing. It's just about solving problems and doing the logical thing. And I would add, that's a pretty high act of Black self-respect, in my opinion, to still, even after you have been mistreated by this Black person, to still say that I'm still not going to help a racist fire a Black person, even a Black person that I don't like, and even a Black person that has mistreated me, I'm still not going to, you know, assist some racist in terminating a Black person. And then they can pull me into it, as he stated, and say, well, yeah, we got to let you go. Mr. Williams, you know, said that you were violent against him and, you know, he had a long list of grievances and we can't have that sort of conduct here. So we're going to have to pack your bags. Feel free to, you know, holler at Mr. Williams on your way out of the building. That type of, I'm not even going to participate in that. I thought that was great. You can go back and hear the archives for the complete exchange. But I would be curious how many folks here, if there was a Black person on your job who had directly mistreated you, including threatening physical violence, and then would you help that person? And or if after that incident, a white manager came in and asked you to give your thoughts and or experiences with said employee, how would you respond? All righty, we'll get to some of the emails, and after I read a few, we'll get to folks who called in. Okay, people who wrote in, I don't know if I'm going to be able to read all of these right now. I might read some and then save the rest for as we proceed through the broadcast. First one, not too long ago, I had a racist encounter with a college professor. My professor is a white male that has made many comments that I deem racist. He usually makes racist jokes and or comments about President Obama and his wife, Michelle. He also makes insults directed at anyone who supports or voted for President Obama. On this particular day, he was giving his lecture as normal. Then, for some reason, he strayed from the subject of the lecture to reminisce about his days in Vietnam as a soldier. At this point, I was prepared for whatever tacky story he was about to tell. He then joked about how much he enjoyed having sex, rape, with the Vietnamese women, cowbell. He said those women over there love sex. I called them little brown fuckers. All of the white males in the class laughed at this comment. The professor looked over and noticed that neither me or the black male next to me were laughing. He then asked us if he offended us. I didn't respond. I just grabbed my things and walked out of class. Tacky, as usual. That might be another one. How would you respond if you were in a collegiate atmosphere, or even if you were in a workplace situation, which is kind of similar, but how would you respond if that sort of thing? Are you offended? That word particularly I pay attention to. I always make sure if we're talking about racism, this is not about me being quote unquote offended. This is about being harmed and incorrect treatment, terrorist behavior, not me being offended. But at any rate, that's one, how folks would or would not respond in that situation. Okay, next report. Okay, in the beginning, roughly 3 years ago, I started working as a paralegal for a staffing company. I customarily greet everyone I encounter with a smile and a hello, good morning, etc. Well, I noticed that one certain man, let's call him Randy the Racist, that I greeted twice never returned the greeting. In fact, he never even looked at me. He just looked straight ahead and kept on walking. I found that rather odd and decided that I would never greet him again because he showed me how he wanted me to treat him. I soon learned that Randy the Racist was one of several executives at the company, and his office was a few doors away from my workstation. At any given moment, you could hear Randy the Racist loudly chastising his subordinates, dropping the F-bomb, saying disparaging things about women or President Obama, noticing a theme here, or just otherwise behaving like a stark raving lunatic, insert racist. After about a week at this company, as I was leaving my workstation to meet with my supervisor, Randy approached my coworker. I could overhear him asking who I was and if I was qualified for my position. My coworker, who is a white female, confirmed that I was qualified and started to discuss my credentials. Then he said that he was just curious because he wondered what happened to the former employee that I replaced. Isn't it fascinating that Randy the Racist never spoke to me nor acknowledged my existence in any way, but was so curious about me that he had to ask my coworker about me? Why couldn't he behave like a normal human being and get to know me for himself? Then, more and more, Randy would stop by my coworker's desk to just laugh and shoot the breeze with her or to eat the chocolates that I had on my counter. Dun, dun, dun. I'm just stopping right here because we have talked about this before, this incident before, within the context of workplace racism. I have said, do not have any items on your desk at your workstation that are not needed to perform your job. For most of us, I don't think Hershey Kisses, Snickers, Butterfingers, jelly beans, anything that would go in a candy dish, I don't think that that is required to get your job done. I know it's all fun. I used to do that. I had a candy dish on my desk. I used to do all that goofiness. The reason that I say not to do it, and I, even speaking from personal experience, you're already in an environment where war is being waged against you. That's already taken place. And particularly, you got racists that are cursing people out left and right, and attacks going down, verbal and otherwise, people being sexual harassed. That's what we got. We want to make sure that our behavior reflects that and that we are coming into this environment, no nonsense, being serious, being alert, that we're being attacked, other people are being attacked. We're aware of all this. You do not want to make or have any excuse for racists to come and malinger at your desk. I think part of the lead up in the email was about people coming and hanging out at other people's desks and what have you. If you have candy on your desk or at your workstation, that is an excuse. And I can speak from personal experience. That becomes an excuse for people to come and waste 5, 10, 15 minutes hanging out, talking to you as they, you know, get one or five pieces of candy and gossiping about other people, and or to just practice racism. If it's Randy the Racist or Regina the Racist, whomever it happens to be, that just becomes another opportunity for them to come practice racism. It's an opportunity for them to come and ask you questions, to snoop around your desk or workstation area, figure out things they want to come back and swipe later. It's just a bad idea all the way around. My candy dish was actually stolen. That was a big to-do, having to go and talk to people to get the dish, because they took the whole dish and everything to get the dish replaced. And I mean, it's just a lot of nonsense. I'm big time discourage. Do not bring candy dishes or anything else, pictures, photographs, mugs, any trinkets, anything. People have the little figurines that nothing at the workstation area except the things that you need to complete your job. And if it's any personal property, I would not leave that overnight at your works. I don't even think I would leave it for lunch unattended. Back to the report. So chocolates at the desk. Once in a while, he would tell jokes and cast glances in my direction to see if I was laughing. I refused to laugh, even though he could be very amusing at times. I found his behavior totally outrageous, and I refused to stroke his massive ego. I mean, the nerve of this guy to refuse to speak to me, eat my candy, then want me to laugh at his jokes. After several months, I stopped putting my bang. After several months, I stopped putting candy on my counter because it got way too troublesome. And that's how it concludes. Right on, right on. You just want to avoid that. Her conclusion, that is the exact conclusion that I have come to. And you already are being attacked. You already have enough trouble. We already have enough problems as victims of racism. Anything that can minimize problems, let's do that. And from my experience, having as few trinkets on your desk work area as possible, chocolate, otherwise edible, non-edible, that would be best in keeping down problems and just sending a message. I'm here about business, not chilling, hanging out, eating snacks, gossiping. I'm here about business. I have two more. I will weave those in as we go, and any others that people write in. Getting to the folks on the line, the number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. That'll just be my our running question for the day, or response if people would like to respond to. If not, that's fine. If you have your own situation, great. But just if you were violated by a black coworker, and then a white person, a white manager, white executive came to you and said, what's your experience been with this black person? Would you snitch? Would you tell, you know, yeah, person swung on me and stole my lunch and, you know, whatever else that they've done to you. And would you help that person if it was something that you could do, but they had swung on you and whatever else? Would you help that black person if the opportunity, you know, arrived down the road after whatever incident where they violated, mistreated you? That could just be a running response. People can share their thoughts if you are so inclined. Everyone who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. Feel free to chime in. If we could remember to keep the background noise down, that would be great. Use your mute button if you need to. Caller should be with us.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus, all the listeners and callers. I just wanted to share really brief. Halloween was a doozy at my job. Pretty crazy. I had this one guy who had an afro with a pick on, the wig. He was staring at me for a long time. And so I think I expressed my my feelings. I pretty much got emotional on the last workplace racism. So he was staring at me for a while. He's over at his supervisor's desk. So I said to him, I was like, what's up? And I guess he picked up my tone, and he just disappeared. I hadn't seen him since, and I don't really remember exactly who it was, because I seen him from a distance, and I noticed that he was looking at me. And most people, they pretty much know that I don't try to, like, smile and joke with them. I'm not here for the BS, and I used to be very vocal, like I said. Nowadays, I try not to be as vocal. Another thing is I got a call from the union today, and they told me that they was endorsing Hillary Clinton. I have received a phone call from them maybe about a month and a half ago telling me that, that I should kind of try to vote for her because that would be the best option for our plant staying open and keeping the production flowing. Unfortunately, a lot of guys here still on a pro-Trump campaign, so we'll see how that turned out. And lastly, my fiance is actually having experiences with a non-white female at her place of employment. She is a nurse. I tried to get her to call up before when one of the nurses was having an issue. But I don't know why she's not. She looks to the show before, but I'm not sure why she's not into calling in and checking it out on her own. But she did tell me that they're having a lot of issues with this one girl who, quote-unquote, practices voodoo. She bragged about praying on someone that recently had a brain aneurysm. I think that's how you pronounce it. And someone else caught cancer. So this woman is going around causing trouble for a lot of people there. And she's been fired and rehired. Me personally, if you swing on me, I probably won't help you. I mean, it depends. If you don't hit me, I probably can try to look over that, because a lot of people here, in my opinion, they do worse stuff than a non-white person swinging on me when they verbally attack me. In my opinion, that's a lot worse. I wouldn't call it snitching, because it's something that has to do with me. If it had something to do with someone totally different and it didn't involve me, then I'll probably call that snitching. But no, I don't think that I would go to a supervisor and let them know anything. Unless it got out of hand, and I'll mute. Thank you.
Right on. Other folks who we have not heard from, if you have commentary, questions, feel free to chime in.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you, Gus, and to all the callers and listeners. This is Ross, and it's funny that you brought up the candy jar at the desk, because we had an incident today. I have a white female freckled mutant supervisor who has a big clear glass candy jar sitting right in front of me. And she has candy corn and Reese's Pieces and all these little bits of crap in there. And I see regularly people are coming through, dipping their hands in the jar, getting something. White people, non-white people, black people, they're just all going through. So today, I'm sitting there doing my work, and a black female, she's one of the supervisors for another department, comes through, gets her hands in the candy jar, gets some candy, and she put candy in her mouth and was like, "Hey, that caramel tastes funny. This is bad caramel, I think." I just stood there, and I shook my head, and I said, "Wow, how sad what a lack of understanding of the system of white supremacy is, because more than likely it's tainted candy, and I wouldn't trust them anyway. I did not touch any. I will not touch any, and I just find that to be just kind of scary, because there's so many bare hands going into the container in the first place. If anyone is sick, you're talking about everybody spread, getting germs simply because it's candied corn. So it's not like it's in a wrapper or something of that nature. It's actually the open candy. So I was just like, y'all are just really, really interesting, and you go ahead and enjoy yourself. Another thing I thought about was with the clip you played with Edward Williams. I thought it was brilliant. I will say for myself, thankfully, I've never had any incidences where other black people or non-white people have tried to attack me or come at me in any way in which I've had to defend myself or anything of that nature. So I've been pretty lucky in that regard that I've never had that kind of conflict with black people or other non-white people. But if a situation like that was to happen to me, I wouldn't tell them a thing. I just wouldn't. It's not in my nature to deal with white people. And I would say the one thing that changed my life was when I heard Dr. Ben talk about being assaulted, essentially, by a homeless black male in Harlem. And this is a guy who had assaulted him more than once and put him in the hospital. And he never went to the police, never told anyone anything, and did not fight the guy back because he understood he was mentally ill and he was homeless. And when he was asked why he did not, you know, report it, he said, "I will never go to my slave master to adjudicate any conflict that I have with another African." And once I heard that, that just shifted my consciousness in a way that, you know, that's just the way that I function. That's my code. So no, I would not go to a white person with anything. And besides, I think just me being a person from the streets, we're not used to going to people for anything. I'll deal with the person directly. Of course, I wouldn't make it something that would inflame the conflict. It would be, of course, you know, an attempt to minimize conflict. But the idea is that I would never go to a white person to adjudicate any scenario with another black person or non-white person. And the other thing I thought about the Edward Williams clip, because and I love the fact that you play these clips in the beginning, and I thank you so much for that because they're highly insightful, is the fact that when white people set us up to tattletale and give them information on other black people, I thought about some of the shootings that we see where either a black person snaps and goes postal and just shoots up the job, and including non-white black people, and even instances where white people go postal on a job and shoot up, you know, white people and black people as well. I'm thinking some of these incidences are facilitated by things just like that. When they ask you these questions and you go on these tirades about this person said and this person did, and then that person has been under such psychological stress and pressure that when they reach the point where they've had enough and they decide to take a 9mm to the job and just, you know, do whatever they plan to do to the people they work with, they remember those incidences. So it's something to think about that when you do or say something to facilitate a situation that white people are orchestrating, that if that person is under that kind of duress and they choose to, you know, violently react to what's happening, they're going to remember what you did and what you said, because like Gus was saying, and even Mr. Williams, they will say, oh, you know, because so-and-so said, so they already have it in their mind that you're the reason for the situation that they're dealing with, or that you're the culprit for their suffering. So it's just something I wanted to toss out there. And thank you very much for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Let's see. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you have commentary, feel free.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good evening, Gus, to the callers and the listeners. I had two things, but once the caller chimed in about folks on the job practicing voodoo, I got three things now. First, with regard to the question and the scenario that Mr. Williams laid out, I have not had another non-white black person assault me on the job or come at me on the job, but I have had them verbally demoralize me in front of other staff members. So I'm talking about someone who was a supervisor, as I was, you know, and a colleague, verbally demoralizing me in front of folks that we supervised. And it happened once. You know, I didn't say anything. It happened twice. I took notice, and it happened a third time. And I politely wrote her an email, and I asked her to stop doing what she was doing. I would appreciate it if you would not verbally demoralize me in front of the people that we supervise. It just does not set a good you know, tone in the workplace for what we need to be doing. I mean, you know, because we're not in charge anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's bad enough that we black people trying to supervise other black people. This is a disaster. So, you know, she said, you know, and she kind of was like, oh, I'm sorry, and that was the end of that. But, yeah, I would never thought about taking it to the white people, you know, the superiors. That I would never do. second thing was, with regard to what the gentleman was talking about with, you know, other people culturally practicing their religious practices and that causing a kerfuffle in the workplace, I can remember a young lady from the Caribbean, I think it was St. Kitts, and a young lady from Haiti sitting near each other. Each one of them had two different supervisors. One supervisor was white and the other supervisor was black, but the supervisors were like best buddies. And I was always waiting for something to blow up and see how long, how good that friendship was. I'm talking about these supervisors would go out with each other on the weekends and they would call each other and, oh, you know, ha, ha, ha. When one came to the other's office, they would be at lunch. I mean, they were like buddies from different boroughs and they was just lifelong friends. Well, anyway, this happened and the Haitian young lady from Haiti took it to the union and went to file a complaint, but in the state system, it was called a grievance at the time. So immediately that pit, I mean, because the black supervisor was kind of like, no, you, the Haitian one is wrong. You know, my employee is correct. It really caused a big, big deal between this black supervisor and this white supervisor. And I just sat back and I was watching. I was like, well, I wonder what's going to happen now. So what happened was the employee who made the grievance, the Haitian young lady who made the grievance, who was supervised by the white supervisor, she won. And what happened was that the other young lady from St. Kitts was transferred to another floor in a whole other department. And that broke up that relationship between this black supervisor and this white supervisor. And I'm talking about they were like really good friends, going to the casinos on the weekends up in, they were very, very good friends, you know, a bunch of them. And she was the only white one. There was like a bunch of other black supervisors that would go. But they were very, very good friends. And that ended that. I mean, it was like, okay, I am the white person and I'm in, you know, no matter what in this relationship, we're friends, but I got the power. And that's exactly what happened, and that relationship was over. So I just wanted to mention that. And my third thing was that I am interviewing, I'm trying to interview in my field, but I'm finding that it might not be a great decision here in South Carolina because the department that I'm looking into was under a great deal of scrutiny by the state of South Carolina. I found out there was a huge write-up in the paper, which kind of explains why I've been getting all these callbacks for interviews after, you know, been hanging around for a couple of months. Now, like, I've been getting a call for, like, 3 and 4 interviews because they need help solving this problem, but I think I want to stay away from it. But my question I wanted to ask anybody, I had an interview and a white woman and a black person, and I think they do that by design. I interviewed for about an hour, and the white person asked me if I had any questions. So I asked them, I mean, it was a simple question, and I asked how much training would be provided. And she immediately got upset. She was like, I'm just letting you know right now, I'm looking for somebody who has a framework for exactly what this position entails. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, I just talked to you for an hour. If you don't get the fact that I have a good framework, you know, for what this position entails, then I don't know, you know, I don't know what you're thinking. So, I mean, she kind of like got really, you know, taken aback by it. And I thought to myself, that's strange. And then the black person that was sitting there co-interviewing, I suppose, kind of chimed in with something. But then the white person must have realized that she kind of lost her cool. And then she said, oh, well, you know, if you do need help, I'm always here. And She's always here if you need any assistance with anything or if there's something that you're not familiar with. You know, we are here. So I sat there and I looked at her and I said, well, you know, I'm the type of person that I like to ask a lot of questions because, I want to be clear about what I need to be doing on my job, and I want to be clear about my responsibilities. If there's something that I'm not familiar with, I will ask questions, you know. So my question is how much training, asking an employer how much training is involved in the position, is that an appropriate question before you get hired or after, you know, because like I'm totally out of, I haven't interviewed in so long that, you know, when I was interviewing, you know, I wasn't even thinking about asking all of these questions, but yeah, training, is that something that should actually be asked at an interview or after you're hired? And that's all I had. I'll mute my line. Thank you for listening.
Appreciate that. Folks can respond as we go, right? Same thing if you are interested in responding to the query about how would you respond if, you know, you were struck on at the job and then the supervisor asked you about that employee and all that. People can respond to that question as well about, you know, whether or not you should ask at all about training or whether that's a question that should be asked before you're hired or after you have the job. Other folks that have dialed in that we have not heard from, if you wanted to respond to anything we've heard thus far, or if you had your own situation, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening to everyone on the broadcast this evening. Good evening to the guests. actually, a couple of good things in reference to the plantation. I started my new job. I resigned on Monday with my old company, the white female manager that I had. I was in the mortgage business. I'm in the mortgage business. And I walked in there, gave her my resignation. She's like, oh, is there anything that we could do at all to keep you? I said, absolutely not. And she sucked my hand and I left. And it was really liberating, but it wasn't really liberating because then all of a sudden I go to my new office and it's just white people everywhere. So... that was interesting, but the good things that I had was my 2 days of training, which was learning the systems, how we price loans, things of that nature. Had a beautiful black female trainer, very knowledgeable, just fantastic, and we were all sitting there talking. There's another non-white gentleman in the class, and we were all sitting there talking, and this white, older white guy, veteran, which to me, veteran and military just equals white supremacist, and he said something, and I was talking about that I'm from New York, and, you know, I said, hey, I grew up in this part of New York, and he was like, oh, what's there? And I started talking about the high school that was in the area, and he said, didn't this famous basketball player go to that school? And I said, yeah, but I said, there's more people from that area. And I said, you know, Denzel Washington, Felicia Rashad, Sean Combs, Debbie Allen. And I started going through all these people. He was like, oh, I didn't know they produced all those kind of people. And her and I just looked at each other and we smiled because it was almost like, man, she's codified too. But I wasn't sure if she was confused or not. Then today I taught my real estate class. Another great, good setting, had 9 people there, 7 of them were black people, either real estate agents or professionals, lots of self-respect. The broker's office that I'm working in is a black male, lot of black self-respect. I was very, very excited to be in that particular office. So it was just good to see, black people in positions to where they have opportunities to make a significant income. The one thing I am noticing is that the people that are classified as white that I work with, they treat me as if I'm just, I don't even know what to call it. I think you guys will probably know, but they look at you like you're not black. And I think it's just simply because of the fact that I follow the code book to a T. I'm extremely courteous. But I don't do anything other than that. I go eat lunch. I leave. I go to the office. I handle my customers, and that's it. And I'm finding that that's extremely effective for me. because before I used to kind of say, well, I need to let everybody know my position on things, but now I just want to go in there and make money and just try to help other non-white people. And then real quick, I'll mute my line. In reference to her question, I do believe that you should ask as many questions as possible, because typically what happens is when you don't ask questions and you start the job and they have some sort of assumption or expectation that you know how to do something, and then all of a sudden you don't, you know, what's the old saying is first person, last one hired, first one fired. And so I don't think, particularly you being a non-white female, I don't think that would be a position that you want to be in. And then I actually, I had a question, and I don't know if I should ask it now or to ask the callers later, but it's in the area of economics and real estate, and maybe I'll ask it a little bit later, so I'll mute my line. Sorry about that, guys.
No apologies. You did remind me, there was a listener who wrote in their question. Someone called in on workplace racism, I believe, last week or within the last 2 weeks. And they were talking about how them learning about racism, white supremacy, they applied that information to the job. They worked, I believe, in finances, banking, and they used that information to try to help other black people financially directly on the job with what they were doing to try to help them just do better with economics. I think it might have been banking, something to do with loans maybe or what have you. But this was recent, within the last 2 weeks or so, they called in. We had a listener who was hoping maybe just to do an email where they could ask a question or two to get a little bit of information from that person who dialed in. If you'd be interested in helping out another victim of racism, if you could maybe drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, and then I can forward your email. Oh, was that you?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Well, if you have financial info, maybe they'll, you know, they can ask their question to you. But the person that dialed in within the last 2 weeks who shared about getting info on counter-racism and applying it on the job to help black people financially, economics, drop an email, and if you'd be willing, I'll forward your contact info, your email along. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you had commentary, feel free.
Hey, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, hello there. Oh, I'm sorry about that, but hello to everybody. I'm calling up here in North Dakota. Let me slide out there, boy. I'm on the plantation right now. Excuse that noise. So anyway, to answer the question, no, man, I wouldn't tell on nobody, you know, because I'm kind of, that's just how I am anyway. You know, I ain't going to tell on nobody anyway, especially no female. Now, I don't know what my response, I ain't going to tell on nobody, but, and then for the training question, you know, I can see what the other brother was saying too, and then sometimes I would wait till I get higher, because sometimes when you asking by training or something, being black, they gonna look at you like, you know, they like you might be incompetent, and they don't really want to put no efforts into trying to train you up. So, you know, especially if you're saying you got experience in what's going on, and then now you need training, and it's like, man, we don't really want to deal with it. But, I mean, it could go both ways. So sometimes it might be good to ask beforehand to let them know that, you know, you want to know how to do the job properly. So, you know, I want to be trained right. And so then I had this racist at work. She come in there, this old white lady too, right? She in there walking around with her daughter. She got her daughter up there, right? And so she bring the girl over there to me and say, this is my daughter. She say, this is my daughter, Keith, man. She say, isn't she just beautiful? And I was listening, and I was like, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Because you don't really want to say, you know, I mean, I don't even know how I pulled the rag to that. But I just was like, yeah. You know, it just kept on moving, man. And Shoot, I mean, we got so many questions. I ain't even going to ask my question. I just asked my question probably Saturday night, man. So, yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank y'all.
Appreciate that as well. The caller at 9938, you were, I think you spoke up simultaneously. Did you have commentary? Nine nine three eight. Are you with us, or are you just listening? Maybe they're just listening now. Other folks who dialed in that we have not heard from. Did you have commentary?
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey guys, what's going on? How you doing today?
Right, poorly.
Out to the caller. I apologize. I was kind of distracted. Anyway, I have called before. My name is called before about work. About racism on my job, and I called about my employer a long time ago. And I'm calling again about a situation that I had a few weeks ago. And I just kind of wanted to ask a question and get your advice on a few things. Over the last month, I invested some money into a small company. My wife and I was traveling to Brazil. And I came across these young men who were smoking tobacco, Brazilian kid, and I've been smoking cigars for the last, I'll say about 10 years. And I asked him, you know, where can I get some good tobacco from? He told me his brother rolled tobacco. So I smoked some tobacco. They had some really, really good products. So I told him, if I wanted to get this tobacco back to the States, is there anybody I can get in contact with? And he told me he had a brother who lived in Miami. Long story short, he connected with his brother, and we kind of built a relationship. And over the last 8 months, I actually launched my own tobacco line, a black-owned tobacco line. It's starting to do very well. But a few days ago, I was on my way to work, and I got a call. Since I launched this product, it's really been picking up. A lot of people's been paying attention to it. So a lot of times I usually never answer calls from numbers I never recognize, but since it's starting to pick up a little bit, I'm answering any call that comes through my phone. So a couple of days ago, I got a call, and I answered, and it was an African-American gentleman, and he told me that he was following my business page, and he went to my website, and he loved what I'm doing, and a lot of people is talking about my products. But he says something that kind of caught me off guard. And he asked me, he said that, who are you marketing to? I was like, I mean, anybody who wants to smoke cigars. He said, I'm noticing you have a lot of pictures on your Instagram and Facebook and of a lot of black people smoking your cigars. He said, just a little word of advice. You might want to be careful with that because that could tarnish your brand. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, if you want to cross over, you might want to start taking pictures of white people smoking your cigars. And I'm like, are you black? He was like, yeah, I'm black. I was like, so my question to you is, what is wrong with your black skin that when once people see you smoking a cigar, it tarnishes the brand? And the reason why I called Gus, because I really want to ask a question. Why is it that black people are the only people who always feel that we have to have white people face on our products in order for it to be successful or to be accepted? And that's my only question. If anybody can answer that question for me, because I'm still lost. Like, what does it mean crossing over? I mean, if I have a good quality product, my product is good. That's all that should matter. Why do I have to put a white person's face on my product in order to cross over? And why do black people think that way? Because he was really adamant about me taking pictures of white people.
Fascinating. I will answer your question. That is not true. In terms of black people being the only ones who think this way, not all black people, but black people, period, being the only ones who think this way. There was a big report in 2000, let's see, There was a big report in 2010 about quote-unquote Asians, and this was like in China, Japan. This was not even in the States. This was in a quote-unquote Asian country or Asian nation, as they say, where companies would pay white people to just come and hang out at the office, get a desk, and look like you work here or look like you are the face of the organization. They would pay them to do this because other Asian people, they had that same contamination, that same brain trashing under the global system of white terrorism, where they thought, oh yeah, white people, you know, that really means that this business is humming. If they got some white people working here, or they got some white folks in charge, I mean, hey, we want to invest. We want to be partners with you. You know, we want to do business. That they were suffering from the same thing. That's what racism, white supremacy is. That's worldwide. We just had the guest on yesterday talking about the same type of thing in Uganda. I just think, in my opinion, as I've stated consistently, I think we regularly just minimize and underestimate the massive impact that white supremacy has on all aspects of our existence, thought, speech, actions, and emotions. And the conduct that you described from that victim of racism, that's his victimization. And him thinking, and it is based on logic. I mean, they have talked about that before, how sometimes in the system of white supremacy, racists, they attempt to sabotage black businesses, especially if the black businesses are prominently featuring black people, either in the promotional material for the company, or if they prominently have black people staffed and working at the business, so it's obvious that black people own and run this organization, that sometimes that has caused trouble for black people. I think enough that you do have victims who might even be paranoid, whether it's what the comment that victim made to you, or them actually paying whites to just come and pretend that they work and or own the company in a different part of the world. That is the type of behavior and thinking that the system of white supremacy produces, because racists do so much to sabotage non-white people in all areas of people activity, not just economics and labor. Hopefully that makes sense. Did other folks, and definitely I wish you tremendous success with your business, with your product. I hope you are able to make lots of money, whatever they mean when they say crossover or what have you, but I hope it's continues to do great for you. You said it seemed like it was starting off well anyway. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you had commentary, feel free to chime in. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Other folks that we haven't heard from.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, greetings, Gus, and all the callers and listeners. This is Mel. I wanted to kind of chime in on Brother Ross when he made the comment about the candy bowls. All I could think about is, like, have you ever, like, maybe had something on your tongue or something? Like, I mean, it might sound weird, but, like, maybe a hair or something, you just, like, kind of get it off your tongue. That's like digging in a candy bowl like that is like grabbing the bathroom doorknob in a public restroom and then, like, sticking it in your mouth and just, yeah, that's just gross. I would never do anything like that. But my wife, her people had an experience. So she's in the grocery store, and she's at the meat, and she's at the butcher, and she's, ordering. I guess she's having a cookout or something. And she's ordering, I need some lamb chops. I need some, this and that. She's ordering all this stuff, like, the good stuff. And there's a white couple standing behind her, and a husband and wife. And so the husband, I guess she was taking a little too long for his liking. So he made a comment that he was like, I hope she understands that they don't take, EBT cards in this store. And the wife kind of giggled. He's like, man, come on. Like, gosh, she can't afford all of that. So. The lady turns around, the sister, I'm going to call her sister because it's my wife's people. So sister turns around and says, I heard that comment. Why would you say that? So the wife shockingly says, you know, Miss Johnson? And the lady was like, yeah, you know, so-and-so, whatever that lady, the white lady's name was. How are you doing? And the husband says, well, how do you know her? She said, before the wife could respond, the sister spoke up and said, I just interviewed your wife last week for a position. And, I mean, it just, you know, of course, the jaw dropped, and he just basically made himself scarce. He ran off, and the white woman immediately went into victim mode and apology mode, like, please forgive him, and we're not like that. And it was just hilarious. The whole situation was so hilarious. So at the end, the lady was like, well, I guess I shouldn't maybe expect a call for that position. And the sister just, you know, with dignity, you know, she stayed codified and just turned and walked away from her and went and got her belonging, whatever she was purchasing, and didn't even give her an answer. But you just never know. And that was just very intriguing to me, because you just never know. And those people have such a practice of mistreatment and terrorism, and you never know when it could come back to bite them. But I thought that was just so hilarious, man, that I just had to share that situation. And thank you for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
For sure. Appreciate you for sharing that. That's the type of situation that we are in on a pretty regular basis, where the racists are doing the hiring situation. So you never know when you will have offended their racist sensibilities and they decide that, oh, you know, you're not going to get that job or whatever the case may be. We had someone who wrote in a question. I guess we have lots of questions dealing with snitching today, it seems. The person wrote in, there's a white woman I spoke about a few weeks ago. This incident occurred with her yesterday. I have shoulder length curly hair and typically wear it in its natural state. Yesterday, I had my hair in a bun, and she waited until the end of the day to stop by my desk and comment, your hair looks more professional like that, but I like it when it's wild. Direct quote. Question. So this is unrelated. Question. I work in a medical setting. My department is required to call patients after medical procedures. As some of the other listeners may be familiar, we are required to verify the identity of the person we are speaking to over the phone. This woman fails to do this so much during the workday, it's hard for me to keep up. Should I report this? Snitching again. I would need to know if this is a non-white person or a white person. If this is a non-white person, I don't know. I think I would be leaning towards not reporting. If it's really something that's bothering me and I feel it's something that should be done or could potentially cause some problems for me, or might even cause problems for her, if this is a non-white person, I would just address her directly and say, you know, just ask, does she know this? Did they tell you this in training? This is why this is important. You might want to try to make a better effort to do this. It seems like I've heard some of the calls that you've done, and you might not be asking this on a regular basis. You could just take it up with her and ask and see if that was included in the training. Does she know she's supposed to do it and take it up that way? If it's a white person, yeah. If it's a white person, unless this is somehow going to cause a problem for me, I cannot see myself being concerned enough if it's a white person to go and address her directly. It would just be, do I go and tell the supervisor or not? And that would kind of be your preference. I'm not really leaning either way or not. The only reason I'm not leaning towards go and tell if it's a white employee who's not doing this verification part is because they might retaliate. I'd be like, who does this Negro woman think she is coming in here and trying to, you know, get me in trouble and what have you, and then go with some retaliation. So I might just, if it's a white woman, let it ride. If it's a black female, and I think it might, or if it's a black person that's doing this, I might just address it with them and not go rat them out, if that makes sense. If other folks want to respond to this, we have many questions that are on the board now that people can respond to. If you want to respond to any of the other questions, or ask questions about anything that you've heard thus far. If you have your own situation, feel free to chime in.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I actually thought of a couple of other things I wanted to talk about that were brought up. But in reference to the training, I would say, in my opinion, just from my experience, because I've had direct experience with being mistreated in regards to not being trained, that is something that I ask on every interview. I always ask, what the training consists of. Is it a training that will cover all of the bases of what I have to learn? And is there what I need to know to properly execute my job, and is the training ongoing, where we're updated, as things change and develop, whether it's in the industry or changes within the company, if the trainings are ongoing, and is there transparency when changes take place? I literally just asked these same questions at a recent interview. I'm waiting to move forward with them in the next probably couple of days, I would say. But I believe that's a very important question to ask, because essentially it'll kind of give you an understanding going in as far as what to expect. And if things are not up to the standards that were given to you in the interview, you can say, well, hey, when I interviewed for this position, this is what I was told. But yet now that I'm here, this is not what I'm experiencing. And you can juxtapose that against also things that are in the manual for the job, as far as like when Gus talks about learning the manual. So I would juxtapose those things with what's in the manual in regards to what the company policies are. So that definitely, I think, is important. I do understand where the other callers that thought, not to ask that question might be an approach as well. I can understand that. But from personal experience, more or less for me, I would say asking about training is important, just to make sure you're prepared moving into that situation. I had a workplace racism incident that I bore witness to on the train going to work. This was maybe a week ago. I meant to talk about it on the last workplace racism, but I forgot. And it was a train conductor in which I was on the train. He was taking everyone's tickets and things of that nature. And when he got to this particular white guy, the white guy happened to be a conductor for another train line. And he did not, he basically had this white supremacist attitude that he was supposed to not acknowledge the fact that he was a conductor from another line, and ask the conductor on that line for the ability to ride for free. I heard him basically check the guy and say, listen, it's all about respect. You can do whatever you want, but I'm not going to stand for disrespect. I ask for that from everyone. And he's one of the, I would say he reminds me of how you described Nat King Cole, just the epitome of black self-respect and dignity, the way he carries himself every day. And he speaks to everyone, is very cordial. And with me in particular, he recognizes that we're both black males, so there's a connection we have, but I see him treat everyone with such high respect. And when he got to this other white woman, she asked him about why the incident took place, and that's when he explained to her what the situation was. And he said, well, normally we will cross honor conductors for other train lines in regards to letting them ride for free, but he just thought he can get on the train, not explain his position, and just act like he's supposed to ride for free. And it was just incredible to see how he handled himself. It was very codified, and it was just great to watch how he did that. And in reference to coworkers practicing voodoo on the job or African traditional religion, one of the things that I've learned, because I've experienced that as well, but I've actually had to facilitate helping my mother, who was being harassed by, sadly, another Caribbean African female who was actually cheating with my mother's boyfriend, who was calling my mother and just leaving vulgar messages. And I ended up having to use spiritual practices to get her to leave my mother alone, which it actually worked. So I just want to say that's one of the things that I have talked to other African traditional priests about. And one of the other things that I find that can help fight white supremacy is African spirituality. So definitely it does have a lot of validity as far as the power of those traditions, if you know what you're doing, and especially if your approach to it is a positive approach, not to destroy another person or harm them in any way. So I just wanted to throw that out there and say thanks again for such a brilliant show, guys.
Can I please chime in?
Yes, sir.
I wanted to
push back a little bit on my family, Roz. As far and you were totally logical. I totally agree with what you said. But as far as that sister asking those questions, depending on your situation and depending on how you, I mean, you know, if you really need this job and so forth, it would be kind of wise to, because you are an intelligent person, you wouldn't be there even, you know, participating in that if you didn't think you were capable. Sometimes it's good to get in before you start rocking the boat. The red flag was the white female that she got, you know, kind of excited about it. But it depends on your situation. If you are in a situation where you need this position and, you know, the training will come. You will probably be able to train them. You will know that anyway. So sometimes it's not good to really, that's just my personal opinion. Don't rock the boat. Don't, you know, I mean, do your own due diligence. You don't have to, you know, I don't know if you guys understand what I'm saying, but that's just my opinion. Sometimes you got to kind of lay back and the training will come. You will get it. You probably know anyway. You will know it. It'll come to you. So I don't think it's a good idea to, I mean, yeah, of course, inform yourself. I mean, ask good questions when they say, do you have any questions? Of course, ask questions. But not in a manner to where it would make you seem like you would be a nuisance. And I'm not saying that's that question, you know, later along those lines. But I'm saying sometimes you got to kind of just get in where you fit in first, you know. But that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir. I did just want to say really quick, one of the themes that has come out in the segments, the times we focused on workplace racism, frequently for black people, non-white people on the whole, the training does not come. That's been one of the big problems that we have pointed out with workplace racism, is that frequently they do not train or incomplete. The training is incomplete for black people, and that ends up causing problems. So that is one I would not just assume that the training will be there or that it will be proper, adequate training. Thomas in New York, were you going to comment?
Yes, sir. I have my own workplace things to add on to, and it has to do with training. So I'm glad that that's coming up as a topic. At my first job, the racist white female, Trump supporter, she's been recently going on a tirade with a lot of ill things to say about people who collect entitlements. In particular, she feels like, you know, she put herself through school, worked 5 jobs, and, you know, this is her big reason for supporting Trump now, is he's going to stop all these so-called entitlements, but I haven't heard that rhetoric come from him. However, you know, yesterday I decided to give her some pushback, so I asked her, you know, one is, when did he say that? And she couldn't, you know, quite put that out there, and then I said, well, you know, more. You know, she always positions this to, you know, since Obama, always, you know, I hate to say it, Thomas, but black people, you know, getting food stamps and, you know, doing this, that, and the other. So I asked her yesterday, so you all aware that, you know, 3 times as many white people collect some of these entitlements to black people. And she goes on to say, oh, yeah, this is why I don't talk to my sister. So I just, you know, I internally started laughing. Her sister got 5 kids, collects welfare, nothing for herself, and she doesn't talk to her. So just goes to show you, man, these white people, you know, always practicing racism. I mean, this is your white sister. This ain't got nothing to do with us. But anyway, at my other job, you know, the training aspect, and I will say, on an interview, if ever asked about training, I never need training. You know, I know it. I know the job. You know, I try to put myself in a position where, you know, I'm an expert. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to give the impression that I don't know something. I might need training. Now, once I start, then it's usually mandatory at some jobs or others. What I did in this job, now my training's been terrible for my night job at the hospital. There's no supervisors at night. So therefore, the people training me, they have a very lackadaisical attitude. They're not doing a good job of training me at the various departments I need to learn to work at. However, out of the bunch, I've noticed that there are two or three guys who are very helpful and very fellow with their job. Now, in particular, one night, I'm working in a particular department in the OR, and the person that's supposed to be training me, our break is supposed to be from at a certain time, and he doesn't even show up. He takes a 4-hour break, you know, and every night he goes and sleeps in his car. So his attitude is, hey, man, I'll see you at 4:30. I happen to come back on time. And when I come back, I'm like, man, this guy standing here looks familiar. It happens to be the guy, our manager, who's not supposed to be at work until 6 in the morning. He came in at 3 o'clock. He's ready to work. You know, hey, I wanted to train you guys on how I want this thing done now is, you know, the guy who's supposed to be here. So, of course, you know, I'm not a snitch. So I said, I don't know where he is, you know. I'm, you know, said, well, did you take your lunch one time? I'm like, yeah. He said, oh, he took the lunch with you? I said, yeah. So he says, well, where is he? You know, let's go around looking for him. So we're walking around the building looking for him. I know that this guy's in the car, but I don't have no way to reach him. So either way, he comes back at 4:30, and he gets in trouble. He gets written up for it. And, in fact, he has to meet with the union this week about it. And, you know, I mean, he should have been, you know, but just to show you the type of training I'm getting, it's really not there. And what I've learned to do is I go to the people that do a good job and they're always there and working, and I will explain to them the situation. I'm not going to go tell, you know, management, yo, this dude is sleeping in his car. I mean, I'll just be getting above in trouble. But I can find another guy who, you know, I have a good rapport with. I start a little conversation with him and then say, hey, listen, man, this guy was training me, but, you know, he went, you know, disappeared for a few hours, so they'll start laughing. Oh, yeah, that's what he does. I'm like, can you go up there and just show me what to do real quick? Oh, no problem. And they'll go right up and show me. So I've kind of been getting the training, but I've been getting it through my own channels. But nonetheless, I'm getting it, and I'm not getting anyone in trouble behind it. So I feel like, you know, that's a good thing. But other than that, I'll meet my line. Thank you.
It's two consecutive jobs with Thomas's work history alone, where training has been an issue, where we heard our weekly installments from the white woman who deliberately sabotaged his training with the phone system on the previous job that she doesn't even seem to know how to use completely herself. But that training thing, that's consistent. Mr. Williams, we talked about that a lot when he was on the program as well. Other folks that anybody that we have not heard from have commentary that they wanted to get in? Anyone that we have not heard from?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody. Is training a fair, an appropriate question to ask during an interview process? I would say yes. Of course, everyone can do what works best for them. But I feel that even if someone responds negatively to me asking that question, that allows me, because I don't look at an interview as just them interviewing me. I'm also interviewing the people I'm working with, because there's obviously a reason I'm leaving my last job, and I don't want to move into another job and deal with either the same thing or something worse. So if you can't ask the question, you know, because it's not like you work with a company. I think asking for training is an appropriate question because, yes, you have to be knowledgeable to an extent to get a job or whatever job it is that you're applying for. You also will require some training. Each job uses different systems. Each job has, like, different ways that they do things. So training for any job should just be standard, and it really shouldn't be an offensive question to anybody. And I go into any interview with a ton of questions. Training is one of them. This isn't my own personal one, but there was a woman who applied for a job. She got the job, and she stressed for like 2 months. She would eat lunch with us. A non-white woman would eat lunch with us, and all she could talk about was how the training that they were giving her was really, really terrible. But she moved from another state for this job. So if she lost this job, it's not like she really had a support system to just kind of like move into. And they were just very tacky, and last year with the type of training that she was receiving. And she was very, very stressed out about it. Now, I wonder sometimes, you know, and I would it doesn't matter. I wonder if, you know, if you know that going in, maybe you can stay where you are a little bit longer instead of jump ship and find a situation that is a little bit more suited, tailored, positive, or just at least tolerable. And, but for me, I do definitely always ask about what kind of training I'll receive. And then I will admit that I'm a little hesitant to tell a story, but I will. At the job that I'm at now, I started pretty much in a commercial. I'm 1842. I'm the one that lives in Virginia but works in D.C. with the property management. And I started as just a basic concierge in the front lobby of a commercial building downtown D.C., like a block away from the White House. We also have security. There was a concierge there before. Property management didn't like him, removed him, put me in. When I got there, I never wanted to be a concierge. I always wanted way more, but I got paid well to do this job. And so I always wanted to learn more so that I could beef up my resume when I was ready to go. You know, I couldn't really use this experience to do anything if I didn't do more. So I would do a lot. Like, I would plan a lot of lobby events. I would make all of our promotional material. I would do all of our correspondence. Like, I did a lot more that was outside of my contract with the hopes that I could beef up my resume and even move into property management at some point. That became a source of tension between myself and the security officer because we sat in the same space. And there were two male security officers, one from Sudan and the other one from like Northeast DC. And it was, I don't know exactly which one, I think it was slightly both of them that had an issue with my overachievement. Like, let's just be frank about it. Like, just doing too much, doing a whole lot, trying to be extra, extra pleasing. And I totally didn't even have a definition of racism, totally uncodified. I definitely knew the problem was white people, but I didn't necessarily adjust my thinking patterns or my like true behavior or understanding of the situation. I just knew they're the problem with everything. But anyway, so this went on for a long time, and then it became very stressful. Like, they would have, like, real kind of blowouts about it. And he would, in my opinion, terrorize me, the one that I had to sit right next to, by, like it'd be quiet. He would just slam his binder. Like, he would just start yelling, and he would be really aggressive towards me. And, like, just the way that he would speak to me. And it was just like, all right. So I never went to property management, but I would then hear things from property management like, well, we're hearing this and we're hearing this. So then I became a very intensive note-taking process that was really for my own protection. So if I had to go and meet with someone to discuss some lobby event, I would just note-take the time I left, the time I came in, the time, my notes were just vicious. Let me just put it like that. And so it eventually reached this point, and then I just stopped all like conversation, because I used to try to be real bubbly and in your face and and talking and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, this is hostile, and it makes me feel really bad to be putting on this face thinking that you'll like me and you won't. And so I just stopped it, like, not even the good morning. I'm here, I'm doing my job, this is what I'm here to do. So then the Sudanese guy had an issue, because for him that was very disrespectful that I was not greeting him and speaking to him and all of that. So all of this culminates in this huge thing with property management, and we're all contracted. So, you know, it's like they could just cut everybody and say, you know what, we'll just start fresh with everybody. There's so much whatever's going on here. Now, to add also, security had also not been very effective in maintaining the security of the building, but they ended up losing that contract. But each of the people on the team were offered positions with the new security company, if I'm being clear about that. So it's not like they were fired, but their company was let go, and they were offered opportunities to come on board with the new security company. However, and then I moved downstairs and became concierge slash property assistant. Now, I was a little reluctant to share the story because, just to be honest, I had to present my notes because it reached a point where I was, they were like, well, as far as we understand, they're saying that you're the problem and this is what you're doing. And so my notes pretty much was like, well, no, this is what I'm doing. This is how many times they've left the desk unattended. This is, you know, pretty much how it went. And so I don't really know what else to say about that because it is very snitch-ish-like, if not just flat-out snitching. That did happen, and I'm currently still at this job. And when it all, I mean, they, and then the security officers chose not to go with the new company, so they're not in the building. But I was aware that they were offered. So in some ways, that made me feel like I didn't make people lose their jobs. But by the time property management came at me, I was like, well, look, you know, here's my notes. Here's what's been going on. And, yeah, so there it is.
Wow. Fascinating. Fascinating. Having gone through everything, I don't know, like, the how long this whole process took, the change in your behavior, and then you not speaking and other folks getting involved, like, would you alter how you handled or how you responded to any of this conflict? Would you change anything about what you did in handling this?
Absolutely. First, I'm currently seeking employment elsewhere, and for many reasons. But one of the things that I like tell myself all the time is none of that like friendship stuff with anybody, whites or non-whites, because that makes it really sticky. So that's one thing. Like I would just come in and be just straight business, and like just as possible, like clear as possible. Here to do my job, that's it. And I thought I had done that, but not, it obviously didn't work out. And yes, because there are like, when I stop talking, it's obvious. So it's a very, like it's like a passive aggressive attack. Like, it's not even like, oh, well, she's just not speaking. It's like, I'm not even looking at you. You don't even exist. And that, what it does is it just infuriates someone else because they're not getting a reaction or they're not getting whatever they want. So inevitably, it doesn't resolve a situation. It just makes it worse. So, and I attempted, but when we didn't have a proper mediator to really present both sides. And because if you tell me you don't like the way that I'm doing my job because you feel like I'm doing too much and it makes you feel, you know, like you're not getting whatever kind of attention you want, I don't really feel like I should stop doing it because I'm doing it with the intent. And remember, we're totally different contracts. So one thing about security is they also are unionized, which means that they have protection. They have, like, way more stuff than, like, duties than I would as a concierge. So, like, there's way more potential for up movement and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, like what I would do is probably be more clear and be more like less defensive, more open to explaining, well, this is why I'm doing it without making someone feel like it's a down-putting of whatever it is that they're doing and try to be far more patient with whoever it is that's in a situation. Because I don't, another confession, I'm not as patient as I really can be with anybody, whites or non-whites, but definitely working on the patience. And I'll try to talk about racism, try to make this like the forefront, like this is really, you know, non-productive for us. But that was in a far less codified way. So a lot of times it's not received by people who that's not their focus or they don't think that that's something important. So if there's a way of making that something that they're not being, like, preached at, and it's something like, well, hey, let's view this more from the context of racism and white supremacy, here's this definition, let's make it amicable between us so that we can get paid and go without it feeling like I'm just coming down on you, I'm telling you this, and I'm being this type of way. So just try to be as very professional, very clear, but also removed. Like, that's one thing I just that's like my new code. If I could take on a whole new name, I totally would, just to keep a lot of distance between me and everybody in a work situation. I'd still, like, if it all happened the same way, I would still notate. I do believe in that, just because it protects me all the way around. But, yeah, those are some things that I would do differently.
Hmm. Interesting. Quick comment that I would make, just when you said being distant and just being businesslike with your approach and how you conduct yourself on the job, that's one of the reasons. That is a factor in my disdain for referencing other people who happen to have melanin as brother and sister, because that seems like it's evoking a little bit more emotion than I would tend to operate with in dealing even with other victims. Like, a lot of this is just going to have to be very logical and businesslike because of the enormous amount of anti-blackness and conflict that we already have. A lot of emotion tends to be, unfortunately, negative emotion, but we already have a lot of emotion. Just in the effort to try to calm that down and be a bit more logical, that would also factor into the brother sister thing. But I think that's very, very important for being on the job. The note taking, I think, is always good to get reminders about how important note taking is. Even if you are not going to make a report, even if you're not going to talk to management about a serious issue and, you know, have to depend on these notes, even just for you, the act of writing just so that you can organize your thoughts about your work experience is extremely important. You do not want to have this just be something that you are leaving it up to whatever's in your memory about how you operate. You really want to make sure that you have precise details about things that happened or things that were said. And just the act of writing. Again, this doesn't have to be a 5-hour exercise. This can, you know, the workplace journal can be like a 10-minute activity that you do 3 times a week. But that act of writing will help you organize how you think about incidents. I think all of us have had situations where we weren't really sure what happened or how we processed that situation, or maybe we didn't even think it was an act of racism initially. But if you can take that time to make some notes, write things down, I think it helps our brain computer clarify what happened so we know how best to proceed. I will halt there. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Anyone that just dialed in, we have newer callers, so anybody that we have not heard from at all, if you wanted to respond, seems like we have a litany of questions that have been posed, so if you want to respond to any of the questions, if you have your own questions about anything that has been stated, or if you have your own incident you would like to share, feel free. Folks, we have not heard from at all.
Yes, can I be heard?
Let's get the female caller.
Yep.
Hello, Josh. Hello, caller. This is Ms. Meg, a dental assistant out in Portland, Oregon. I wanted to make a comment on the earlier, I think it was something that you read about the student who was in class and some social justice warrior white person was trying to prove to them that they weren't a racist or something. Well, I had a similar issue that happened when I was going to, college for my prereqs for the hygiene program. This is when I was pursuing that, when I thought I didn't want to do that anymore, but because I just figured it would be being abused from another side of the room, so whatever. But that's how I feel about it now. But at the time, I was pursuing my prereqs. And I was in this, it was a writing class, it was like writing 111 or whatever. And we had had a book we were reading, we had already had material that we were writing on, and all of a sudden one day, the instructor, a white guy, decides he's just going to come to class and give his thoughts and feelings on the situation that happened. This was during when that guy, Imus, I can't remember his first name, made those comments about the black basketball team, that they were nappy-headed hoes. well, he decided he wanted to come to class and just have this random discussion. And I was just like, pump the brakes. I don't know what this is about, what this is going on. And again, I mean, I'm out in Portland, so a lot of the time I'm used to being the only Black person, the only Black student in class. And this particular class, there was another Black student, but I don't think he was there when this went down. And like I said, we already had material that we were going over that had nothing to do about racism, nothing to do about IMIS, nothing to do about basketball. And I was already in a sociology class where we were kind of having these conversations. So I was like, well, what does this have to do with what we're talking about? What does it have to do with material? And he couldn't answer. He just wanted to, I don't know, give his thoughts and feelings and prove to me that he's not, you know, he's, you know, I don't know what it was he was trying to do, but I was not having it. I picked up my stuff and I left. I walked straight to the dean's office. I told them what happened and they said, well, you know, you should, you know, have a conversation with the instructor and blah, blah, blah. So I waited till after class was over. I waited in his office for him to show up. And I pretty much just said the same thing. Like, I don't know what it is that you're trying to do. I don't know what this has to do with the material. I'm not here to have these conversations with you. And that was the thing that happened at the college campus. And something similar happened when I was younger in school. I can't remember. It was about 7th, 8th grade. And I had a white female teacher. This was during Black History Month, that asked me to get up and tell, I'm, again, the only Black person in class, the only student, and to ask me to get up and tell people about Black History Month. And I went home and I told my mom about what happened, and she was livid. She went down to the school and had a couple words with many individuals, but, and it kind of reminded me of something that you were saying, Gus. I can't remember. I've listened to so many back episodes, but you were saying something specifically about people that are in the Pacific Northwest that maybe they are somewhat more confused, but I don't know. I digress because it depends. I don't think it matters where you live. I think what matters is what people are telling you about racism in your household and when they start telling you about that. I can remember incidences of especially being in school with a white teacher and things going on, and then all of a sudden my mom is down here to school. So, I mean, I just guess it depends on what's going on in your home. And speaking to the other, should we tell on, well, they didn't say if it was a white person or a Black person, on the person that was not doing their job correctly. Well, when I was working at this dental office, this one particular office, this was the one where I had this terroristic white woman who was specifically giving me these crazy missions when she knew that the other terroristic white woman was coming to observe me on the job. So I would, you know, have to deal with her making up these stories about where I was at. You were here, blah, blah, blah. And she knew that she told me to go do something. But anyway, she was also with other people, and I don't know if she was, I don't know who else she was doing it with, but she would take claim for doing all of the confirmation calling. So we would have to, you know, confirm people's dental appointments and blah, blah, blah. And I would enjoy doing them because it mean I'd get to get away from these people for a few moments. I get to go sit in a room with a, you know, a phone and a computer and be alone and away from them. So I loved doing the confirmation calling. And she was always going around constantly telling people that, you know, oh, you know, we've done all of our confirmations early and blah, 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 blah. And she knew that she wasn't doing them. Well, you know, it takes two to argue, and really, what was that going to lead to? And if they really wanted to find out who was doing the confirmation calling, I have, everybody has a number to log into the computer. They know who does what, when, where, what time, and what they did. So, you know, I just let that go. And if somebody swung on me at work, a man, it is on. But I don't know. I don't think I could be that codified, but that is some, you know, boss level mode, self black respect on that guy's part. And I'll mute my line.
Right on for Mr. Williams. The male caller who spoke up simultaneously with Ms. Meds, were you going to comment, sir?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. How's everybody doing this evening? Wanted to tackle two of the areas. The first area, in reference to the young lady that called about asking the questions about training during interviews, I would definitely agree with the earlier young lady who responded. I think the interviews, and I've been doing hiring for a large company for like the past 16, 17 years. And I would definitely say to utilize the interview as your time frame to get those questions in. And I know we've been kind of taught not to, you know, shake the tree at that time frame. But I think that is really the time frame where you're really going to get a sense of how this potential supervisor or manager is in general. So if they're flying off the handle about a training question, then that probably gives you a good sense about what things are going to be like once you get on the job. So you wouldn't want to leave a position going to a scenario where you can't even ask a question like that. And with the robust money that they're putting in for training departments and programs these days, and like I said, I've worked in HR for many years, a training question is definitely not a question that people should be kind of like a hiring manager should be flying off the handle about. So I would definitely say proceed with caution because it may not have anything to do with the training. It may just be that there was no... She probably just didn't want to kind of move forward with you in regards to the opportunity, and that is what caused that. But just be careful. I definitely always urge everyone to utilize that time frame during the interviews to ask all the questions that you want. I mean, don't get overly crazy, but I think that if you have constructive questions, just like Neely Fuller says, you know, questions and answers, and that's kind of when you're really able to kind of diagnose things, I definitely agree with that and ask everyone to do the same. In reference to the brother who called in about the entrepreneur who started his own business and he's doing well, I would definitely say I hope things continue to go well. While working in human resources, I also started my own high-end business and it's been doing well. I think one of the things that I've actually had to buffer, everybody told me to go out and start saying this is black owned, this is black this and black that. Unfortunately, a lot of the individuals that I have to buy products from, a lot of the individuals that I actually have to go in and get my material to do the work that I do, they're not black. And a lot of these individuals, they will form like Voltron on you if you kind of come into an area where there are not many of us involved in the area. And once they see that you're starting to do well, they will kind of form Voltron on you. And I think Gus mentioned this earlier, and actually kind of start practicing racism, white supremacy on you. And the price points that they'll put on the items that you need will change. Next thing you know, people don't have what you need, et cetera, et cetera. So it is kind of like once you get into these industries, you do have to really be careful because at the end of the day, we don't have folks that look like us that are producers. So we always are kind of at the mercy of these individuals at the end of the day in terms of getting what we need. So, you know, like I said, all the best of luck. Just be careful out there because things can kind of change pretty quickly, especially if you're kind of starting to tap into a market that they dominate. So I'll mute my line.
And they dominate them all. Markets, that is. I did want to say, I thought that was really logical, just following logic about how the white woman, I believe it was, responded to the question about training. It just, in my opinion, anytime anyone gets an attitude, gets upset about a question, particularly if it's not a question asked in a malicious manner, it's sincere, you're trying to get information and constructive information. When a white person gets upset about that, that is like, whoa, major alarm. Like, this person is probably practicing some racism here. And it's just in my opinion, that sort of response is like, oh, man, who is this nigga coming in here asking questions? And she's asking about training. Like, oh, my. I mean, that's how I process that. Like, that's how we want to take advantage of them, where they don't ask questions. Nigra, you know, you don't ask questions. Dr. Welsing used to say that all the time. You don't ask questions. You just do as I say. That's what you do. You all are my little gals and boys. That's the way that they think about us. So that's my response as well. I think that is letting you know a lot about that environment. If, you know, she's going to be angry, I think it was a white woman, if she's going to be angry about, you know, a question about training being asked. Just my view. And it was Mitch Moxley, that was the white man who was hired by a company in China. And they, NPR did a big report on this. The Atlantic did a big report on this. And the NPR report, it's job ad in China, white man, no experience needed. Mitch Moxley, a freelance writer who lives in Beijing, discovered that he could make a living as a fake American businessman. He wrote about this experience, making $1,000 a week as a fake quality control expert in the Atlantic article, Rent a White Man. I remembered contacting him to try to get him as a guest on the program. This is like 6 years ago, and it just fell through. We just couldn't get the scheduling down. But I think that's really important, because I think a lot of times people, black people, get demonized in a variety of ways. And that is one where people think that some of the ways black people respond to white supremacy is something peculiar just to black people. And that is not so. You see a lot of the exact same pathologies, if not all of the exact same pathologies, amongst all of the people who are classified as non-white. They are just more pronounced amongst individuals classified as black, because we are subjected to greater forms of white terrorism. Other folks we have not heard from have commentary?
May I be heard?
Let's get the female caller.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I was the one who called in maybe about a month and a half ago from the Virginia area. I called in about, I spoke about my coworker who was from the continent, who asked me about how come I don't classify myself as white. I'm sorry, I haven't called in for a while. I just moved back to my hometown, and my hours have not made it convenient for me to call in live. But this is my opportunity to call in. Since I've been back, things have been pretty interesting. I work in the security field, as a matter of fact. And I work under federal contracts. Interesting that you guys talk about asking questions during interviews and all. When I first entered in on this particular contract that I'm on, it's not necessarily an interview situation. I kind of transferred with the company I was with in the D.C. area. To come back to Louisiana. And, you know, as we were going through the meeting process to take over this particular contract where I'm working, I asked a lot of questions. And, you know, I was pretty much in front of a white male who was chief of security, and non-white black female. She kind of worked in conjunction with the security department of that particular contract. Black female seemed impressed. You know, white male seemed like he was trying to fake being impressed, but, you know, I guess he had no choice but to seem like he respected it. Okay, great. I want to say about a few days after I started, we're pretty much put in a situation where we're taking over a contract from another company. It was kind of uncomfortable having the other company still there for the next 30 days as my company's taking over the contract. So kind of in a situation where we're kind of shadowing them and also, going about our day as we would and learning how things move about in that particular building. One particular non-white female that I worked with who was from the company going out, you know, she seemed pretty pretty open and willing to train me correctly, and which she was. Everything that she did, I pretty much shadowed and followed, and everything was pretty much stamped by the way that the orders were written, and on paper, this is how things should be done. All right, great, I'm fine. There was a point where I went outside to kind of also help to train one of my other coworkers, to let him know, this is what goes on here, whatever. We're standing outside kind of talking, and a white female, she is found in a wheelchair. She's one of the employees of the agency in the building. I guess she thought that she may have been trying to joke and break the ice. I've pretty much solidified myself there as someone serious. I'm about my business. I've, taken this opportunity to be like, okay, I'm a little bit more codified than I was. I'm really going to set an example here since no one knows me. So I've set that serious example there. White female employee, wheelchair. She rolls up on me and my other coworker. He's a non-white black male, and we're talking about the job and all. And she rolls up and she says, "Every time I see you people, you're just standing around." And she kind of chuckled as if I'm supposed to laugh at her. I didn't say anything because I know myself. The next thing that would have flew out of my mouth, whether I can control it or not, was that every time I see you, you're just sitting around. And I knew if I would have said that, that would have really caused a problem since she's wheelchair bound. But I just gave a look, kind of tilted my head, had like a little mock smirk, but locked eyes with her. And my face was as if to say, "Oh, really?" But I didn't say anything because I knew a tacky remark would come out of my mouth and it would really be uncodified. But I just stayed silent. I just stared at her, and it made her uncomfortable. And she tried to laugh it off, just saying, "Hey, it's just a joke, and I'm sorry, whatever." And I still didn't break my look. I just continued to look at her with that same locked eyes. I never looked away. And she just kept going on trying to say it's a joke, it's okay. And in my mind, I'm thinking it's okay when I say it's okay. But I still didn't say anything because I knew that remark was going to come out of my mouth if I opened it. And, she ended up rolling away. And, I heard her say under her breath, "I effing hate her." So the coworker I was standing there with, he was, I can tell just by monitoring him, he's learning how to be codified, and he just shook his head. He was like, "I know you wanted to say something, but I'm glad that you didn't," And we just went on about our day, like kind of laughing at the situation that, she was trying to make me feel uncomfortable, but I flipped it on her. There was one more incident with another white female employee there. And I think this white female and the lady in the wheelchair, these two seem to link up around break time. My only job when I'm inside of the building is to make sure that everyone's employee badges is facing outward before they enter on the elevator. That's it. All the employees have to do is make sure that it's turned around. If it's not, I will remind you, "Sir, ma'am, could you please turn your badge around? Thank you very much." That's it. this other white lady, she seemed to have had an attitude whenever she would walk in and she wouldn't have her badge turned around and I would have to ask her to turn her badge around. This one particular morning, she walks in. And I said, ma'am, can you please turn your badge around, please? And she took her badge in hand and she just shook it at me and she said, it's right here. Open your eyes. And okay, well, I'll tell you what, you won't get on that elevator until you turn your badge around. If that means I have to turn it off, we can do this all day long. It's not a problem. I said it just like that. And she was still trying to raise her voice, I guess to get me to match her. And I stopped talking and I looked at her. And she eventually turned her badge around and just scoffed and huffed and puffed and got on the elevator. When I had my next chance, I went in to speak to the non-white black female who is in conjunction with the security department in the building. And I let her know of the exchange. And she got with me later on that day and told me that she had a meeting with her supervisor. This lady's supervisor is also a non-white black female. I was told that the white female was asked, you know, exactly what is your problem? Why did you have to disrespect our officer like that? And, you know, her only defense was she felt intimidated by how, you know, I pretty much carry myself like I'm in the military. And, you know, she took that as a form of aggression. And I found that pretty interesting. I almost chuckled when the black female security lady was telling me about when she had the meeting. And I just found it interesting. And in short, I was told, you won't have a problem with her again. You know, we set her straight. And since then, I have not had a problem with her. Her whole attitude has changed. She's not been, you know, friendly, but she hasn't been reclusive. But she's made sure that her badge is turned around before she gets on the elevator. And when I nod my head in acknowledgement that, you know, I see your badge, thank you very much, she nods her head back as she gets on. White woman in a wheelchair. She made it a point to talk to the one of the other leaving security folks who've been there for years. She made it a point to tell her that she felt intimidated by me because I made her feel uncomfortable when she was just joking. That was the information that came back to me. So I asked the lady from the outgoing security company, I said, well, let me ask you this. Did she tell you the joke that she was just joking about? And she said, no. I said, okay, thank you very much. That's the end of that. But I just found that to be interesting. Yeah, that's my workplace racism so far. I'm sorry for babbling on.
No apologies. That great question, asking if she shared the jokes and she was just joking, and you, again, like a little child, got all offended and, you know, made a kerfuffle out of all of this. Did she share the joke? And her saying no. That would have been a great, I can plug, man, we should, either someone should come up with a product, that way we can plug something that a black person has made. Or we should get like stake or stock options in one of these gadgets that is like the MP3 recorder. But that would have been a great opportunity to boop, hit record so you could have, you know, what was said, record it. And then you could just play it back. Boop. All right. Let's see. Everybody get ready to laugh. Boop. And you just play it back. Anyway, also, we've heard, or at least I can speak for myself, I think we have heard that pattern of people that work in like security or in some capacity where you as a black person, like you have to, you have the ability to stop people from getting access to a certain area unless they have, you know, whatever credentials or allow consent to being searched or whatever it is. And racists, whites, taking offense to that, or it ended up being, you know, a big situation. I remember Cynthia McKinney, a listener, emailed me about former six-time Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who was a guest a couple times on the Cows. She had a big conflict with a security officer who was being rude to her. I think it might have even got into like a physical confrontation, but it was around the same type of thing. Not just a black female, Congresswoman down in Georgia near Forsyth County, I believe, and being confronted with some white security officer. Other folks have commentary? Anybody we haven't heard from?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir. No
greetings, Gus. Greetings to all the callers. it's Finn from South Florida. just wanted to give my workplace racism. So last time I spoke, I was speaking about at my job at Mercedes, being a detailer, and going through it with the supervisor about just basically about we having different views, and about him you know, constantly since that time that I exposed, you know, who I am, like what kind of views I have and things like that, which I shouldn't have done. But since that time, it was a constant, either every day or every other day, it was a constant threat to my job. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know how long you're going to be here, man. I don't know how long we're going to hold on to you. Or, you know, I kind of have my own style about doing things. I stay within uniform, but, you know, I wear a lot of socks, like high socks, colorful attire and things like that, but it's always within uniform. So he had an issue with me not dressing more to his liking, like, you know, solid colors and you know, low ankle socks, things like that. So he had a problem with that. He had a problem the fact that I would wear slides. I would wear, you call them slides or flip-flops or whatever, while I was working. And according to the rules of the job, you're able, as long as you're in uniform, then you're fine, which the uniform is nothing more than a shirt that, you know, that has the company's logo on it and the name. So he made a big thing about me wearing slides. So I asked him, and I, you know, was writing at the same time. He didn't know where I was writing, but I was writing it down, you know, what he was saying about slides, because he's a supervisor over, I don't know how many stores, but he's a supervisor over many stores. But at the particular Mercedes that I worked for, he has his managers at the different stores. So the manager at the store where I was working at was the same thing. You know, he wears his slides, you know, as long as he's got on his shirt or whatever, but he wears his slides or whatever he chooses to wear. And it hasn't been a problem. So it was never a problem before me. Then once I came along, and like I said, at the beginning, you know, everything was, maybe the first 3 or 4 days, everything was fine. But once I shared my views, not lengthy, just, you know, how I feel about my skin and about my people and things like that, since then it's been a constant, oh, you're not doing this right, or I might have to fire you, or why you got on slides? So I asked him, I said, you know, your manager wears slides every day. And, you know, this is somebody who, he's over me. So I pretty much do what he tells me to do. And you're not here, you know what I mean? If he doesn't have a problem with it, I don't understand why you have a problem with me doing it. So he went into, it looks tacky, and I don't like that, and I'm gonna get on the manager too. And so that kind of blew over. I stopped wearing slides. So earlier this week, mind you, he's somebody that I've known pretty much my whole life, off and on my own life. I met him when I was maybe like 8 years old. And he's a couple years older than me. He's along with my sibling, my sister. So, but he's known me for pretty much my whole life. Like I said, I've known him. And, you know, we have different paths, but, you know, I see him, hey, how you doing? Stuff like that. So now on the job, he'll come to me, hey, you know, Kenfolk, man, you know, we got to stick together. You know, I always look out for my fam and this and that. But then just as quickly, he'll turn around and say, well, but, you know, I have to let you go, you know what I mean, because it's all about my job and, you know, I have to, this is how I take care of my kids, which I understand, but you can't play, like, you can't be my kinfolk and how to articulate this, say things that would, or say things and do actions to make me feel like you are, you're going along with the fact that we know each other for forever. But then turn around and cut that right off and say it's strictly business. That's all it's about. So this Saturday just passed, we sat down and talked. We were at one of my coworkers' house. We worked at the same area. I mean, same spot. And sat down and talked. And yeah, just a whole bunch of just. But I won't even go into it because it was a hogwash. But I was off Sunday, and Monday I came in. Everything is supposed to be out in the open. We're supposed to talk. You know, everything's fine. So I get a call. Mind you, I come in anytime between 8 and 10. All since I've started my job, my hours are flexible. It was told to me my hours are flexible because I don't take breaks. I just work straight through the day, and I got as many cars as I can, and I go home. So I get a call. I get there about 8:45. I get a call like 9:15 telling me I'm fired because I was late. So I didn't ask anything about it. I didn't give any pushback. I was just like, okay. And I left. You know, I clocked out and I left. I had, like I said, once I expressed my views and the impression that I got from him was that I wasn't somebody that was, even though he knew me, I wasn't somebody that he could just, you know, he had me doing everything out there. And at one point in time, I told him, I can't do this. I was hired to do a specific job, detail. This is what I want to do. Furthermore, he promised me, you know, my pay would increase. It never happened. He never stuck me back to detail. And like I said, Saturday, I told him, you know, I brought that out in the open. He said, well, I need you to do what I want you to do. You know what I mean? Wherever I put you at, that's where I'm going to put you. And so I was like, that's not, you taking it to, you know, us being friends and I need you here and this and that, whatever. But I'm on the business part saying, I don't want to do that. That's not what I was hired for. So by us having that class, I kind of knew Monday, sometime this week I was going to get fired, but it came Monday. And I, like I said, I knew it was coming. But I just found it, I know he's a victim, but I understand I don't want to say proxy racist. I don't want to use any of those terms, but he definitely is in a constant motion of practicing racism. And side note, I found out that they have a scheme going on out there where he's a supervisor. And it has to do with drugs. He picks up and he drops off to different places. Well, I found out about it. Nobody told me. I just was putting it together by him always coming at me, but never really saying anything to anybody else. So I kind of exposed it to the guys, my coworker, who, you know, pretty close. I exposed it to him. He was like, you know, you're right. You're right on. You're dead spot on. But what's going on out here? And I, without a doubt, I'm sure he probably mentioned it to the supervisor, or, you know, he probably already felt that I knew that and I was seeing that. So, like I said, I never mentioned it, but I found out about it. Well, excuse me, I mentioned it to my coworker, but I never mentioned it to him or to anybody else. But I saw that going on, and I just knew I knew already, but once that happened, I knew I wasn't going to stay at that job. I wasn't gonna be able to. So, needless to say, like I said, I got fired, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that experience. I learned about, people who are victims of racism kind of go back and forth in between being truthful and being liars, or being loyal and being unloyal, because in their eyes, they're trying to keep their spot secure in this system. So it was definitely a learning experience, and thank you for letting me share, Gus, and I appreciate the platform. I'm you, Malone. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. I know, I've said this before. I know with workplace racism, I think racism in general, but certainly workplace racism is not exactly the most appealing prospect at times to dial in and talk about how we have been abused on the job and, you know, mistreated and those types of scenarios. It's not necessarily a thing. I don't think many people, you know, get excited about, yes, let me go talk about, you know, how I got denied a promotion at my job, or got denied tenure as a professor, or how they, you know, docked my pay, or I had to go and grab. I mean, that is not exactly appealing stuff to talk about publicly with strangers, no less. But I do think it's constructive. I appreciate you sharing. I did want to say, just because I've said it so many times, I don't want to sound like a broken record. I'm certainly not indicting, but it's so important, because I've seen that happen so frequently where black people voluntarily or after provocation, because that does happen at times, share their views on racism, and it does not work out in their favor ultimately. I've seen that happen a lot, and that's why I just say all the time, you know, we do not talk about racism on the job. I mean, that's just got to be a major part, I think, of counter-racist codification for labor, even with other black people. Even with other black people. Like, I wouldn't care if O.J. Simpson and President Obama tap dance at the farewell ceremony in January when they leave. He pardons O.J. Simpson and Mumia Abu-Jamal and Assata Shakur, and they all come to Washington and tap dance. Like, I would not say a word about it on the job. I mean, that's just not, you know, I've just seen consistent, and even with other black people. I know some people, you know, have said that they have had dialogue with racism. Roz has brought this up and even recommended the show. I've heard that from others as well, recommended the program. But I do not even recommend that. I've seen a lot of different situations where sharing your views on racism, or bringing up the pride that you have as a black person and that sort of thing. It's just racist. Say, oh yeah, we are going to get that nigga. They will not be on this plantation much longer. Sometimes even other victims take that position. The other thing that I thought was really important, it seemed like you were suggesting that it was a non-white person who was on the job, who I guess was involved in some way with your termination, that he was racist. And you said, you know, you were making an effort to not call him any names, but you, I think, said that he was practicing racism. How does a non-white person practice racism? And I guess just really quickly before you respond to that question, I also thought it was important you said, I think one of the things that you learned was that victims of racism are not able to be loyal, in a sense. Their behavior can fluctuate because they're trying to maintain the little bit that they have, I think I'm paraphrasing, under the system of white supremacy. I think that is very accurate and very important to keep in mind, and why I've said consistently, you're not going on the job really anywhere, but certainly not on the job thinking that, you know, these are my homies, my brothers and sisters, just because they have a certain amount of melanin. That's going to set you up for frustration and disappointment every time without fail. You are on the job. You are an army of one. in dealing with any problems, anything that comes up. You got your own back. But the question, how does a non-white person, victim of racism, how do they practice racism?
I feel it. I'm gonna articulate it the best way I can. There was an incident where the guy is non-white. He's black. He's a black guy. My supervisor, ex-supervisor. There was an incident where one of the porters, I guess you would call them, or valets, came back there. All of them, the majority of them are white males. So one white female. So one of them came, you know, they frequently are in that the station where we, you know, we detail and we do service washes. So I apologize for the background noise. One of them came back and he, you know, very loose with his language. He's one of the type, you know, he grew up around black people or non-white people, and you know, kind of like the woman on Sue Africa that you had on before. Are they kind of going to that black, like trying to speak like us, or how they think we speak, or how they think we, they should be heard when they're around us? So he came out, and he was speaking to somebody, and he calls out, "Yo, my nigga, what's going on?" So immediately, I turned to him, and I said, you know, but I said it low, but it just so happens that my ex-supervisor was in earshot. And I turned around to him real quick, and I said, "As long as I'm here, don't use that word around me, or we're going to have a problem." Very uncodified, very, you know, just reaction, but that was just something that I did. You know, I don't apologize for it. I don't feel bad about it, because I feel my dignity, you know, came up. But I feel like I should have been done, you know, maybe in a different manner. So
hang on a second. I apologize for the interruption. I'm hopping in. The question was, how does a non-white person practice racism? And this seems more like a kind of a long-winded anecdote. And it's not really, because what I've heard thus far does not answer that question at all in terms of how does a non-white person practice racism. Is it any way we can kind of fast forward to get to?
He turned around and said to me, "Well, Sam, you know, if you feel that way about him, why don't you go take him around the back? I'll go with y'all. You can go give him a fade right now. A fight with him, you know, get into a fight with him and straighten him out if that's how you feel physically."
Mm.
And I just said to myself, I made a comment, true enough, but now here it is. You told me, you got me, you know, you get me on the job and you know, keep me out here and this and that, whatever. But now you're telling me to go and physically fight somebody who he did disrespect me, but now you're telling me to go physically fight him on the job, no less. Why, I'm going to lose my job if I do this, and also run the risk of going to jail. Like, in my eyes, that was racist. That was a way to get me, I don't know. It's kind of, like I said, it's hard to explain, and I don't want to be long-winded like I just was, but in my eyes, how I felt, that was, he was practicing racism.
Hmm.
I'm wrong, I understand, but.
By him suggesting that you go and fight this was a suspected racist who came out and said, the, you know, what's up my niggas, or whatever else he said. This was a white guy who did this.
Yes, this was a white guy. Okay. White guy that he is, you know, pretty good friends with.
Okay, so this race soldier makes his tacky comment, and then this black guy that you allege, he practiced racism by suggesting that, you know, if you had a problem with what was said, you go, you know, put hands on this race soldier. Is that's what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. Got it. Other folks that we have not heard from. If you all had commentary or questions, feel free. Anybody that we have not heard from? Let's try our vote. Yes, sir. Let me try you first to see if your line is clear. Go ahead.
Speaking to me.
You're breaking up. It's. We can hear you, but it's not clear. It's choppy. It's like you have a bad connection.
You hear me now?
We can hear you, but it's still choppy.
Yeah, something happened with the dialer. I pressed it just back in.
Just maybe if you can hang up and dial back in and see if that clears your line. Okay. We'll open your line as soon as you dial back.
Okay.
I think that was our caller in Florida. If you want to proceed.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I had a few observations come up, some recently, and I was thinking about one time when I was in high school. I think this would qualify as workplace racism. And during the summer, I had a summer job. I was going into the 11th grade, and it was the last day of the working time or whatever before we went back to school. And they were having it to where every student had to come up and I guess speak some words or whatever. And I just remember, like, it was a whole bunch of joking and people making fun of each other. So when they put my picture up on the screen, you know, I walked up there and I just made it just short, sweet, and simple. And I just said, I'd just like to thank such and such for the opportunity. And, you know, I have nothing negative or counterproductive. I think that's the terms that I use to say. And, you know, everybody have a nice day, you know. And I walked over and I got my certificate. And the guy, he was like, hey, you know, I want to see you here next year. But see, the kind of work it was, that's something I didn't really desire to do. It was like lawn work, like working outside a lot. And then when I got back, the guy that was pretty much signing my pay sheet, he was like, yeah, you know, that's the right thing to say. You know, you don't say nothing negative. And I was like around 16, so that was the thought that I needed to, basically the action that I needed to take to go up there and say that. But it's, my next incident was, there was a conversation I overheard from this white female at the job, and she was talking about some kind of name she seen on the screen when she was indexing. And she said, you know what, I just can't stand the name Desiree. So, you know, when it comes to names, I'm thinking that, I don't know if you could be talking about someone who's classified as black, but she was saying, you know, yeah, a chick named Desiree got into a fight with my mom or something like that. And, you know, you just can't help but overhear stuff. So she said, yeah. And she was just so quote unquote ratchet, you know, that term keep coming up. And, you know, she was a you know what. So that might be one of them fill in the blank acts of racism, where she might have been thinking of the term nigger or, you know, monkey or jigaboo or something. But she knew that she couldn't have been too explicit with what she was sharing on that phone call, because I was sitting, you know, right next to her. And the next observation was, there was like a rape that happened, and there was an email sent out about, I guess, you know, the females primarily being careful. And this happened about like a month ago. And like from what I was hearing, that it was a white person that did it. But from the news report that came out the other day, they arrested a black male, you know, with dreads. And they say he was from Jamaica. And what was interesting was that there was a reporter from that same station who was also arrested for sexual battery on a minor. But, you know, well, not surprisingly, this story wasn't reported, and they were, I think, taking it at the same time. And this guy got put on $1 million bond the black male, but the white guy was put on 150,000. So that's a stark and large difference. One of two last incidents were I was in the break room, and we had one of the older black female employees that retired. She was just coming back to, I guess, pay everybody a visit, and she was eating lunch with a white person. So my older supervisor, he's going to retire in a few months. He says, oh, well, I guess she's too good to come in here and eat with us. Now, she was eating with a white person across the hall, and he used the term prejudice. He said, I think she may be doing something that's kind of prejudice. And he looked at me when he said that particular word, even though the whole room was full of white people. But he, like, when he used that specific term, he looked at me. So, somebody jumped in. So I didn't respond, and then they just pretty much carried on with the conversation. But he asked me, like, wouldn't that be, that sounds like that's kind of prejudice, huh? And then he said my name. One last incident was, there was another incident where, this person came into the job, and apparently, like, when she was a juvenile, like, she was being classified as white. But it looks like she's a person who might have a white and a non-white parent. And then as she got older, they started classifying her as black when she started getting felonies. But on an earlier time and on a ticket she got, she was classified as Asian. And on a juvenile, she was classified as white. And on a felonies and misdemeanor, she was classified as black. So, yeah, that's something that I noticed from this weekend. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
Wow. Now that is fascinating. Well, you said the felonies and misdemeanors, she was classified as black. Now for what was it where the charges where she was classified as Asian?
It was a traffic ticket.
Traffic
a citation.
Did any of the records was she classified as white?
Yeah, it seemed like those were the records where she was in her younger times, like getting into, I think the term they use on that is like a fray or something like that, like fights at school and stuff, and just disturbances, things like that. But as she got older, like past 18, 19, 20, those were the documents where she was checked off as black on the arrest reports and saying that she had hazel eyes, complexion, medium. They use terms like that, but it seems to switch around on this particular person, and I think she has like a white parent.
That is fascinating. It's always important that racism, white supremacy, these racial classifications are made up, that they just throw the labels around how they want. Where you can have someone, their racial classification can change throughout their existence. I think that's very important in a system where you do have a racial hierarchy where black people are treated worse, that her racial classification changed where the most serious offenses, then her racial classification becomes black. That is, wow. Quite symbolic. It'd be interesting to see a picture of like what she maybe even to see several pictures of what this person has looked like throughout her life, like in her younger days, if she got a little darker. I know that happens sometimes for people who have a white parent and a non-white parent, to see how she has changed as she has gotten older, how phenotypically if she has changed as she's aged. That would be interesting counter-racist study. I also thought it was significant when you were talking about the dialogue, a coworker is eating with a white woman in a different area of the building. And, this, for whatever reason, sparks notice. And the white guy makes the comment. He says, that might be prejudice or whatever. I guess someone had said that she thinks she's too good to eat in here or whatever. She has to eat over there. However she said it, I'm paraphrasing. And he says, that might be prejudice. And he looks at you. I think that's so important, just noticing little things like that, because at the end of the day, the essence of all of this is about terrorizing black people, especially non-white people on the whole, but especially black people. And so it's just like, all of this is about you. I mean, to me, that's like we almost an acknowledgement of, you know, might be a little prejudice. What we do with you niggers. Mm. And he looks at you almost for confirmation or acknowledgement or just example of prejudice right there, huh, Negro? Like, that is, I just think that's really important because I think other people have talked about that just when the terms that we generally invoke when discussing racism are brought up, prejudice or discrimination, and it's like one black person present or one non-white person present, it's almost like everybody will look at that one person like, yes, representative of this treatment, continuing, you know, go on with their dialogue. Real important, I thought. Do we have other folks who had commentary? Just make sure we didn't miss anybody. Anybody that we have not heard from at all? I'm sorry?
Can I be heard? Can I be heard?
I can hear two people. Let's try Ramon because he's dialing back.
Can you hear me?
It sounds a little better. It's still breaking up a little bit, but...
can you hear me?
It's still breaking up. It's still breaking up.
Hey, Gus, try back. I'll try back one more time.
Okay. Appreciate the effort, sir. Yeah. Sorry for the tech issues.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Can you, it's me. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I still hear the gentleman. He's breaking up. He's still speaking. Okay, anyway, I'm used to being the only black man on the job, and it's very stressful, and it's actually kind of steered me out of my trade because of that. Because it can be, and I don't know if you remember my first very time calling in, I explained to you guys how I was going through it, and it, like, was stressing me all through the weekend, and, I mean, like, I carried it home, and it affected me all through the weekend, and it's so stressful, so I chose not to be in that environment again, but I think maybe we need to figure out some type of, instead of testimony, we need to figure out some type of collective way of, I think the way we can end the workplace racism is to become our own boss and, you know, figure out a way to where we can, you know, collectively or individually, we need to maybe get on that mindset instead of, you know, I mean, griping about what we go through every day, maybe we should gear our minds towards, you know, figuring our own way. Do you know what I mean, Gus? Hello?
Oh, sorry, I hit my mute button at the wrong time. Certainly, I appreciate the commentary, and I would say, first of all, that...
I got a train coming by, so I'm going to mute my phone. I got a train coming. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you for letting us know. I could hear the chew-chewing in the background. I think, first of all, I would say that I hope that we, as I've said all the time, we have so many problems as black people, victims of white supremacy. We do not have time to waste if... the workplace racism segment sounds like it's just a gripe session about problems that we face on the job and something that is not constructive. Definitely, let's invest our time and energy elsewhere. We do not want to waste time. I hope that, you know, there are actually some suggestions, ideas, potential strategies to help solve problems. That would be one. Number two, I certainly am not in opposition to black people, any non-white people, who are of the mind that they want to get out and create jobs, start their own businesses where they can hire other black people and solve some of our employment problems, financial problems, workplace racism problems. Grand. I have stated consistently the notion, the idea, really it seems to me to be almost a cliche that Mr. Williams talked about that somehow if black people start businesses for themselves, that will solve our problems with workplace racism. That notion is astronomically false. We would still be having this program. It would just sound different because we would be having a lot more indirect problems with whites, and or we would be having a lot of the conflict with other non-white people. It would still exist as long as the system of white supremacy exists. And I've heard that so much, I include that in every description for workplace racism. The entire time that we've been doing this program, which is, I don't know, 3-4 months since the summer on Thursdays, it's in every description. I say it on every post on Facebook. I say it explicitly at the beginning of the program, where I say the people that should be first to dial in are black entrepreneurs, to dial in and share about their experience. If they've been able to completely avoid racism, we for sure would like to know that. But I seriously doubt that's the case. I've seen enough examples of black people who are self-employed where racism has still been a monumental problem for them. I think we heard some of that today. Where it still ends up being a problem, either having to deal with other non-white people or having to deal with racists directly or indirectly. It's still going to be an issue. So that would be my response to that. I could be in. Actually, that's one I wouldn't even concede that I could be in error. That just is. That is just counter-racist logic. That's just the facts of white supremacy. Opening up a business as a black person will not solve your issues with workplace racism.
And that's totally logical, and I agree with you 100%. What I'm trying to convey is that we should start a show or something to gear us towards production. I mean, if you produce something and not provide a service, if you produce something and if you have a supply where there's a demand, then that will totally change the dynamic. And it's like we're not me, I'm guilty. I'm definitely guilty of this. But I'm not producing anything. I'm not creating a demand. And maybe we should try to gear ourselves towards, let's figure out, collectively, not necessarily individually. But that's totally logical. I understand what you're saying, and it's not like a boo-hoo session. I don't think of it as that way at all. I'm just thinking maybe we should gear our minds towards creating. And I guess that's what I was getting at, but I just got a new job a few days ago. And I'm back on a new plantation, so I'm sure I'm going to have plenty of stories. But I'm just saying, maybe we should gear our minds towards creation. Let's create something, y'all. Let's get together and create something. Let's do something instead of relying on them. And I think that would maybe help. And, yeah, I would love to get a business and employ other like-minded people. I mean, that would be my dream. I would truly fulfill my life dream if I could do that. We don't all have the resources. We don't have the knowledge because we're victims. But, if we could gear our minds towards that perspective, I think maybe that would help. That's all. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to mute my line.
Appreciate that. No argument here. That is completely logical. I certainly support that, agree with that in terms of just trying to be productive. Not just about consuming a lot of products that are white owned and making our enemies stronger with our consumption. Other folks that we have not heard from, anybody that we missed completely, we have about 15 minutes left. Anybody that we missed completely? Anybody that we have not heard from?
Can I be heard?
Let's see. We'll try 9828.
Is it me? This I'm sorry.
Caller at 9. The caller, last four digits, 9828.
I think that's me, Gus Ramon.
Yeah, can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, I think something was wrong with my headset. I was talking in it at first. I don't think y'all could hear me. But, yeah, I'm just still kind of, you know, messed up about the whole situation when, you know, I think I spoke to y'all once before about it on the workplace racism dialogue that you all were having on a Friday. I think that was before you started the Thursday workplace racism event. And it just, since then, I went through a lot, you know, behind that event when, you know, the work comp doctor denied me services, denied me medical attention, you know, and lost my job, you know, just like things, you know, lost my order, I lost my job, you know, they don't, you know, seem to take it too kind about me losing my job behind my injury. So, you know, then I had a lot of family things going on after that, you know, the death of my mother, you know, so all that type of stuff, man, that piled up on me real heavy, man, you know what I'm saying? And it was like, it was kind of overwhelming, you know, and I hardly talk about it, but, you know, I did not make what y'all would call codified decision in response to that, you know, started kind of, you know, just let things, you know, get the best of me, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm coming up out of it now, you know what I'm saying, getting back to my old self, doing things like I need to, but, man, it's just amazing how callous people could be, you know, how they are, you know. I know the context of this conversation is not, you know, about white supremacy, so I'm not going to make it about the victims who try to pit for the stress on other victims after they know they have been victimized by white supremacy. But it's like I said, you know, those people, they had to pay me on the work comp issue, the work comp folks end up, you know, making the settlement with me. You know what I'm saying? And they also told me, my lawyer also told me, that I could still go after that doctor for denying me medical attention when he knew I had tissue damage behind my job and cursed me out. Do you remember me sharing a video on your page where the doctor cursed me out and threatened to put me in jail for seeking medical attention?
I do.
Yeah, and he told me I could also seek, you know, some type of thing, court settlement from that. And I just now got the physical and, you know, spiritual strength to even try to treat those damages from the doctor mistreating me like that. You know what I'm saying? And but the thing is, I lost the video. I don't, because, you know, like, my phone locked up, and I had to take it to AT&T, and they get my phone back right. They had to clean my phone up. So I had to clear out all my videos I had in it. And I was wondering, is it any type of way that I could go back and try to find that video on your page? Do you think there's any type of way I could do that?
They say the internet is forever. So if you uploaded it to Facebook or wherever and shared it on my Facebook page in that manner, it should be still there. Or however you got it, however you posted it on my page, it should still be there.
Okay. And if I'm not correct, that I know it's probably hard for other folks to know that if I'm not correct, they're probably about 6 months ago I shared it, if I'm not mistaken. Do you have any idea if I'm not incorrect?
What date is this now? You said 6 months ago, when you first told us about all this?
Yes, well, when I shared it on your page.
I think it was sometimes within the last 6 months, 7 months or so. That seems about accurate.
Okay. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And if y'all know any, I contacted one person who is a lawyer, and, you know, they were Caucasian, but they were, like, famous for winning cases in my state. And but they denied me. They said, no, they don't want to represent me. And but the lady told me, she said, for some reason, they don't want to represent you. But she said, I strongly suggest that you pursue it. And just if y'all know in the African-American lawyers in Alabama that deal with that, you know what I'm saying? You know, my name, Yeshua Amate, on Facebook. You know, if y'all would like to, you know, inbox me or anything, Yeshuomatay, about any personal injury lawyer in the state of Alabama, I would really appreciate that. And I'm going to switch over to something positive. Okay. Workplace racism, good. Because white people are always practicing racism. Recently, you know, I was going to pick up a load, you know, and I actually think, and I'm mentioning this because I'm talking about how good are the benefits, are the constructive things that come out of workplace racism dialogue and just common racial dialogue in general. I learned how to talk with not only victims of racism, but especially the racists themselves. I was told to go pick up a load, and I did not have the hours of service to legally go pick up that load and make the delivery on time. Now, listening to DST Renegade and listening to Media Fuller, I think it's one of the probably the most beneficial things that ever happened to me. Now, I am very uncodified. I am not what y'all call codified, but I try to be. It's an everyday process, but I try to be. You see what I'm saying? But I'm human, and, you know, sometimes my anger and things I go through life personally, you know, it weighs heavy like a million pounds or a million tons at least. But so I take out my frustration just like everybody else do. You find the nearest victim of racism, right? You see what I'm saying? But they came to me, they wanted me to accept the loan. You know what I'm saying? And I said, well, I don't have the hours of service to legally deliver the loan. And they were like, well, okay. Well, just get the load and try to get there when we can, you know? Try to get there when we can. I said, okay, well, yes, I'll get the load as soon as my break is there, my 10-hour break is there, and I'll head toward the customer, you know? And so, you know, I went and picked up the load, got the load, and I head toward the customer. And just like I stated the day previously, I wasn't there at 7 o'clock. You see, now 7 o'clock, I get a call from a suspected racist asking me, am I at the customer? And I responded, no, I am not at the customer. I don't know why you are asking me this over and over again because it was sent to me in text messages at first, but I wasn't going to pull over and answer no text message. And okay, I don't know why y'all asking me this over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. When I stated to you yesterday, I did not have the hours to legally deliver that load. And they were like, "Well, what time did I talk to you on the phone yesterday?" I said, "That's irrelevant. What time you talked to me yesterday? My hours did not. I did not have the hours to legally go pick up that load, and my bill of lading." When they signed up my time out from getting unloaded from the previous load, will back up that I did not have the hours because they got done and loaded me. I didn't even have the hours after they got done and loaded me at the previous place. So they hung up. They were very racist, rude, hung up in my face, did not feel they have me to even treat me with respect without hanging up in my face. So they hung up in my face, you know. And listening to this show, the benefit that I get from listening to workplace racism and things of that issue is I learn to be more cool-tempered, especially when dealing with the white supremacists. You see what I'm saying? Because the white supremacists can make your life very bad, you know, which I have learned through listening to the program. But, so, they called me back, but this time is another perspective. Racist calling me back. And she was like, "Well, I know I talked to you yesterday. I know I talked to you yesterday, and you're not there yet." I said, "Well, again, I'm suspicious of your motive for even questioning me about why am I not there when I let you know yesterday clearly that I would not have the hours to legally pick up that load and deliver it there on time." I'm trying to remember you saying something about that kind of, or whatever. And then I was like, I forgot what I said, but I do know I kept driving home the fact that I clearly let them know that I did not have the hours to legally pick that up and make that load, deliver that load on time. And she got real upset with me because I kept bringing up, which I'm sure they were recording me now. I'm sure that they were recording me. And I'm also sure that they were trying to press my button to get me to become emotional and have an emotional outrage about them, you know, picking or poking at me when I clearly let them know that I couldn't do that the day before. But I held my ground, and I stayed on target. I just kept repeating what I stated to them the day before. I did not have the hours. I told you all yesterday I did not have the hours to really pick up that load and deliver it on time. And you all still asked me to go pick up that load. And that's when she got frustrated. When I didn't get frustrated, she said, "I don't know why you keep on saying that. Even though it's true, I don't know why you keep on saying it." You know,
caller in Alabama, hang on 1 second, because we are running out of time. And there was one other caller that we hadn't heard from at all that I wanted to make sure I checked in with as well. But I wanted to say, number one, I remember you mentioning to us before when your mother passed, but just the system of white supremacy is designed to wreak havoc on black mental health. So I hope that I'm glad to hear that you said it had for a moment got the best of you, but it seemed like you at least are doing a little bit better. I hope you, you know, continue taking care of yourself spiritually, mentally, physically, all areas of activity. Try to take good care of yourself. The system is designed to just exactly as you said, overwhelm us. That's what it's designed to do to black people. Ramon, are you still with us, sir? Did you want to comment? I think, did we lose Ramon? We might have lost Ramon. Oh, there he is. Ramon, were you going to share service? Yes, sir. think you might still be breaking up, sir. Give us another sentence. Sounding kind of staticky. Try again. At this time, I think it might be your volume. It looks like it might be if you can maybe turn the volume on your microphone down, or maybe if you can speak softly, because it looks like it might be a volume problem. Try turning your volume down or speaking very quietly.
Okay, can I be heard?
That was it. Crystal clear. Just keep make sure you keep your volume low or lower your microphone volume.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to ask you, Gus, did y'all switch over to a new carrier? Because after you were complaining, I noticed this new thing came up called Zynga.com. I've never seen this. Is that something new for you?
I don't know what that is. What is Zygaia or whatever? What is that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what, when I click on the link to call in from the website, you know, from the BTR website, that's what comes up now.
Hmm. That's odd. I'll have to check that out to see what that is exactly.
Okay, moving forward then. Good evening, Gus, and to the audience. I did want to share a couple of things, and because we're running short, I'm going to get to some of the other things I think are more important. I want to respond to the gentleman that called in about being an independent contractor. I myself being one for 14 years, and I remember him saying something about children being heckled by the children and things when he's out on the job sites. I want to say to him, if he's listening, I've always implemented a workplace policy for safety as any other company would. That's how I feel about it. And in my workplace safety policy is we can't have children, animals, or anything running around in the construction area. Excuse me. I just wanted to offer him that because that would put him in the position to have control of at least his work area, and that could eliminate having the children around and any other unwanted life form. I went out on an estimate last week. Got called for some floor restoration work, and I'm sitting here talking with the client, and he tells me about his attempts to concoct a homemade version of some of coating strippers for a floor that he wants me to restore. And, you know, he went into telling me how the manufacturer of this stripper gave him the chemical recipe of how to put this together. You know, so in our conversation, I was like, well, sounds like you've become a, you know, chemist or a physicist or something. He's like, no, I'm not that, but I know enough to be dangerous. Another observation over the weekend during Halloween, suspected racist dresses up as Colin Kaepernick with the afro and a homemade 49er starter at a putt-putt golf Halloween party for children. My wife and I took our grandchildren out for the party. And I noticed that they were serving alcohol as well, so I took note of that. I have another one that's pretty lengthy, so I'm going to leave that one alone to the next race place place call-in. So I just wanted to share those things, particularly with the independent contractor. So thank you, Gus, and I'll mute my line.
All right, on. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Appreciate the suggestion for the listener as well. We pretty much did our 3 hours. Thomas in New York, were you going to get something in before we get ready to sign things up?
No, I'm not. I'm back on the plantation now, so I'll talk later.
All right, on. Appreciate it, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That is our three. I guess to wrap, Ms. Meds, are you still here? I thought you said you had a question as well you were going to pose, but you said you were going to save it. You want to ask your question as we part. People can think about it and respond as we'll be on the next few days.
I don't think I said such a thing.
Oh, I thought you said you had a question, but you were going to wait. I might be mixing up my callers.
Yeah, I think that was a guy.
Oh, okay. Right on. Glad she's still with us. I thought there was the person who said they had a question, but they were going to wait. Still with us? Mind if I go back?
Hey, Gus, if they don't have a question, I think I have one.
Okay. Gus, okay. That's fine.
Yeah, I was wondering, the classification change for the females, do you think that's a part of their strategy of using that for their statistics to say, well, African-Americans create, they get arrested at X rate and versus Caucasians and stuff, something like that? I was thinking about that when you said that, when a gentleman said that her classification changed, but when it came to a felony, then she was classified as black.
In terms of, could that be a strategy, like something that they do on a widespread basis, or that not being an isolated type thing?
Yes, sir. Like, do you think that they do this all around the world to say, hey, there's, because they use Chicago or like North New Jersey, and they'll say that the crime is at an alarming rate. But then sometimes when you look at some of these areas, you notice if you live in some of these areas, if you know about some of these areas, crime rate isn't the same as it used to be. So I was wondering if they use that for like a tactic to say, hey, these guys are still committing crimes at an alarming rate.
My view would be absolutely, in terms of even at a broader stance of just the racial classifications, it's all going to be designed to strengthen white domination over non-white people. So they will be very manipulative if, you know, it suits their needs to reclassify. You got a criminal conviction, so now we're going to make you just throw you over in the black so we can run up their percentages and, you know, who's committing crimes. It wouldn't surprise me if they go in and book people and they could look like George Bush, but they'll go in and book them and say that, oh, it's a black person. So they can just have explosive numbers just all the way around, just generating confusion. Deception being the primary method of practicing white supremacy, to just make it up as they go. It's just real, real important. That's the most important thing, I think. Anything dealing with racial classifications, racists, make it up as they go. That is a big part of the power that you can wield as a racist white supremacist. So I think that's the main thing. And yes, I'm sure it's used in a variety of methods across the world. We will wrap there. If you have submissions, I had two other things I was going to read, but we'll do it next week. If you have submissions, things you would like to email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. I normally do a better job incorporating all of our emails as we go, and we'll read them. You can keep it anonymous if you would like. If you have guest suggestions, questions, other comments, if you can't find something in the archives, just feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @untiljustice. We'll be back tomorrow. The second installment of Lothrop Stoddard, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. We're on chapter two, very early in the book, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. And if you want to do a little extra research, I have the debate between W.E.B. Du Bois and Lothrop Stoddard. It was in 1929, so this is like 9 years after the book was published. But it's fascinating. It's not very lengthy. It's like maybe 20 pages or so. So it's not something that would take a long time to read. If you want to check it out, I'm just going to make a link and then I'm just going to post it on like Facebook and Twitter and what have you, so you can check it out and we can add that to the discussion of the book as we proceed. Anywho, thanks everyone for tuning in. I hope it was a constructive exchange. We do not want to waste time. So if you're not getting constructive information from the broadcast, let's find better things to do with our time. I hope folks find better solutions, strategies for minimizing conflict and successfully navigating the obstacles and warfare being waged against us on the job. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. We want to constantly make sure that our behavior reflects that we are in a system of white supremacy. We want to make sure we're in position to make the best decisions at all times. Let's minimize our contact with enforcement officials. You never know when today will be the day that you bump into Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, any of these other race soldiers, badge or no. Whites are dangerous. Being under the influence is not going to help you manage that situation if your life depends on it at your best. I don't think most of us can say that things are going to be better if we're intoxicated in making life-threatening decisions. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.